Sorry, I forgot I was on mute. Dr. Stenhoff?
Here.
Dr. Davis Wilson?
Present.
Dr. Davey?
Present.
Dr. Rates?
Present.
Ms. Denton?
Present.
You have a quorum.
Great. All right, well, welcome everybody. Are there any remarks from the committee before we jump into the further agenda items? Okay, hearing none. I got a further glimpse of all the efforts that the board is making and does for, I had firsthand experience sort of with the committee, but just with the psych board overall, it's pretty incredible. So I wanted to express again gratitude for the efforts that you all are doing, not only to help the committee do what they do, but also just the psych board overall, from behavior analysts to psychologists, much appreciated. And great to see how well the team works and all the efforts that you all do to put that together. The other is committee, the efforts that you guys are doing as well. I mean, the documentation that you all go through and the efforts that you're doing just to help out, it's much appreciated and it's encouraging to see this side of it as well. So I wanted to express the gratitude also to the committee for the work that you're doing and in service to the community at large as well for the state of Arizona. And I think it extends beyond the state as well. So thanks for that. I appreciate it. I noticed there are a few people online, community members. Let's back up. Let's go to agenda item number 4, approval of minutes. Are there any comments on that? Or any changes that were noted?
I move that we approve the minutes. And awesome. I think there's 3 sets, the January meeting, the special session in January, and the executive session. So I move all 3 sets.
I'll second.
Mr. Chair, I'm not sure if I can vote on approval for the 2 that I was not present for. I don't know if that means we need to approve them separately.
You can still approve them in one motion, but if you would just announce the recusal on which set of minutes you will not be voting.
Good.
So Dr. Rich, would it be Oh, I'm sorry. Go ahead, Dr. Rich.
I would just need to recuse myself from the January 8th, both the regular session and executive session minutes.
Okay. So noted. So we have a motion and a second. Any discussion? Okay. All in favor of approving, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Okay. Carried. All right, let's move on to agenda number 5, discussion, consideration, and possible action regarding scheduling of the next special meeting with stakeholders. And as I started to discuss earlier, I noticed some stakeholders are here from the community. Would you please announce yourselves so we can move into this discussion?
Good morning, Raquel Elzey is here from Aziaba.
Welcome. Anybody else? Okay, Ms. Pakanon, did you want to discuss this and offer what we're looking for?
Certainly, Mr. Chair. So at the conclusion of the January 22nd special meeting, the committee acknowledged that there were a number of items that we simply didn't have time to address, and that, you know, there may be a series of meetings required in order to cover all the material that that you would like. So as I recall, the committee was sort of targeting maybe another meeting in March. February seemed a little bit too soon. March seemed more realistic. So I think we are considering dates in that month. you don't have any strict timelines that I can think of that would necessitate, you know, meeting in a certain time. It could be April if it's the committee's pleasure to push the meeting out to that month. We do have some items that require some research, and we've tasked our student intern to do that work. I'm confident she'll have the work ready by late March. So I think that if we want to sort of focus on that time frame, that would be appropriate.
Ms. Packanon, are we talking like the last week, like the week of the 22nd that people are looking at, or are you a different week?
Whatever the committee determines is appropriate, you know, staff will take your direction on that.
Yeah, just looking ahead, I know we'll have a CBA meeting on the 2nd of April, so perhaps maybe that week before the week mm-hmm. of the 22nd.
Yeah, I think that makes sense.
If I mean, as so long as we have the documentation, I don't know everybody else's schedule. I was just looking at the board schedule and the CBA schedule to see what.
Right. Yeah. With the exception of the board's complaint screening committee meeting on Wednesday the 24th, that week is clear of other board or committee meetings.
Other board members, are you guys looking at your calendar so maybe we can nail this down while we're all on here? Do you think like a Friday again, like the 26th, or is better for everybody, a Friday? I see a lot of nodding. Dr. Stenhoff, you better take control of this mess.
Does anybody have any recommendations? Dr. Davey, what was the date you proposed?
Friday the 26th, like another 9:30 start.
That works for me. Committee members, does that work for you?
No, what time you work?
I would not be able to do the 26th.
26th is out, okay. Let's see, do we need to move to March 5th is...
What about the, Diana, is it Thursday work at all that week? Or is that in
his work schedule? Dr. Davey, Thursday does not work for me.
Mr. Chair, Dr. Davey, I was looking at February.
Of this year or next year?
I don't know. Maybe 2 years ago.
Okay, so let's reorientate the doctor here. February of 2021 is now.
So Dr. Davis Wilson, does March, were you thinking March 26th, Dr. Davey?
Yeah.
Okay, so Dr. Davis Wilson, does March 26th of 2021 work?
That one does work for me.
Okay.
That works for me as well.
Okay.
And Paige, Dr. Aid seems to be nodding her head.
Dr. Aid?
Yeah, that works just fine.
So, Ms. Packanon, would you just mind sending us a calendar hold now during this meeting so we can get it in there? I know you'll get us all the Zoom stuff later, but that way we'll all block it. And thank you.
Certainly, Dr. Davey.
Dr. Stenhoff, I know that we coordinated this schedule with the stakeholders last time. Does this time work for Ms. Elzey?
Sorry, I couldn't unmute. Yes, that works perfectly. Thank you.
Ms. Packanon, can we make the same efforts we made last time to reach out to the community stakeholders through the different organizations? And Ms. Elzey, can you also reach out to people just to ensure that there's a good turnout for that?
Absolutely.
Yeah, and Mr. Chair, I think last time we schedule a 3-hour meeting?
Yeah,
we probably should have that discussion. Clearly 3 hours wasn't enough time, which was fine. I guess my question would be, what is your level of endurance and availability to schedule into how far into the day?
Well, let's start with a possible start time. So committee members, does that 8:30 start time work for everybody? Again,
9:30. Come on, I got to get my beauty rest, Dr. Stenhoff. 9:30.
Dr. Davey, I don't think you need any beauty rest.
I need my some time on my Peloton. My Peloton and I are in a very deep relationship.
You're welcome, since open to the community, to bring your Peloton with you if you'd like to.
Meaning with my headband on, that might look a little.
It might be funny to watch.
I think a lawyer might not approve of that.
Miss Galvin might be fine with you riding your Peloton while we're talking about things. Okay, so due to Dr. Davies' need to ride a Peloton and beauty rest, does 8:30 work, or would you all prefer a later start time?
I'm open to 8:30 or 9:30. Either one is just fine with me.
Same here. 8:30 or 9:30 would work.
Okay. All right. So let's go with 8:30, if that's all right with everybody. Well, let me ask committee members or board staff. Does that start time work for you all as well? And Ms. Elsie is the sole speaker for the community. You have a lot of power here. Would 8:30 work for?
Yes. Yeah. 8:30 works great.
Okay.
Okay.
So let's plan on March 26th at 8:30. And now let's move into how long. Ms. Pakanon asked about our endurance. So what do y'all think as far as how long, you know, would be reasonable?
Mr. Chair, I think the 3 hours is nice. Anything more than that, I think, becomes problematic. I know that the community stakeholders do kind of drop off after 2 hours, though. Mm-hmm. So I'm not sure if we want to take that into consideration, because one of the reasons why we scheduled the special meetings is because the agenda items for the committees were already going too long. And if we have the special meetings and we have, you know, I think on the 22nd, we had 3 or 4, you know, community stakeholders present. Right. If 2 or 3 of those drop off after 2 hours, then it kind of, I think at one point, one of the members was like, yep, I'm the sole one left. So perhaps shorter meetings, you know, more frequently, especially since we're talking legislative stuff that isn't happening this year anyway. Perhaps that would be a better.
Okay. All right. So, Dr. Davis Wilson, do you recommend the 2 hour? Or would 3 hours be amenable?
I like the idea of the 3 hours to get stuff done, but I think my recommendation would be to stick to the 2 hours, seeing that that's about the endurance of our stakeholders.
Okay.
I
just want to comment to that. I mean, also the stakeholders have the ability to float in and out, unlike the board members. So it's like, even if one of them can't be there at the 8:30, but can get on at 9 or 9:30 and join us for those 2 hours. So they might be able to roll, would be my only comment. I just get concerned that, you know, this is the meeting in late March, as we kind of start to run into timeframes. I mean, it can always end early if we don't have a community stakeholder, but we might want to block the 3 hours, just be careful. But I agree. I mean, we want them there, and if they're not, then that becomes an issue for us.
And I can be sure to address that with the other stakeholders, that the importance, and it's far out enough that, you know, I can send the notice today and just, you know, reiterate the importance of trying to attend, you know, the full 3 hours if possible. And if not, then, you know, to attend as long as they possibly can, and a variety of members as well.
Okay.
Well, Ms. the 3 hours work for you, because I know you're the chair right now of
right. Yes. Yeah. I will block it off now, and I will be sure I'm able to stay the entire duration.
Thank you.
Okay. So let's, it sounds like 3 hours is the consensus then. So let's plan for that. Okay. All right. Any further discussions related to that agenda item? Okay. Hearing none. I noted some applicants for initial licensure on the phone, and if there's no disagreement, my recommendation is to address a couple of the applicants that are online, and then we can come back and talk about the agenda items number 5 and 6 and 7. Is there any issue with that? Okay, so in order, then I move that we are, let's move to agenda number 8, discussion, consideration, possible action regarding recommendation of the board pertaining to approval of behavior analyst applicants. And we will just discuss the applicants who are on the line. Then we'll move back to agenda items 6 and 7. And then we'll proceed back to 8 and finish that up. Does that work for everybody? Okay. All right. So looking at names on the on Zoom, looks like Cesar Quijada is on. Is the first applicant on our list who appears to be online. Ms. Folks or board staff, do you know, is there anybody else that would be before Cesar? Okay, so Dr. Davey, your lead. Before we get started, I want to make a note that Mr. Quijada and I worked together for a short time in a school consult, but I feel that I can review this application without any bias.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Cesar Quijada is coming forward for licensure in the state of Arizona. He has completed the application, noting that he became a behavior analyst on November 16th of 2020. The application is completed, notes Arizona State University, where he studied the applied behavior analysis track under the special education program. During his time, he's worked under the supervised experience towards certification and licensure as a behavior specialist at Douglas Unified School District under a BCBAD, Vanessa Fessenden. I'm going to slaughter that last name. Sorry, Vanessa, if you're on the call. In reviewing the application, everything seems appropriate and in line. Applications are the supervisor in question has been a licensed behavior analyst in the state of Arizona since 2015. And so I see no issues with any of the documents put forward and would move that this go to the full board for approval. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Committee, any comments about this application? Okay. All right. Hearing none, we'll move on to the next. Oh, Dr. Davis-Wilson?
Yeah, I just wanted to just make a general comment about the location of his employment, and that this is the first time we've had a behavior analyst in the state in that area. And I think it's very exciting because it's an underserved population. It's an area that there's some amazing work that's done in Douglas around like the medical side, medical health home side. They've got some great home health clinics, and many of those professionals have been really, really, really looking for support in the area of behavior analysis in that area of the state. So it's very exciting to have a behavior analyst able to serve that need. So very exciting.
And Mr. Gayada, congratulations on the completion of that, and I'm glad that you'll be down there serving that area.
Thank you guys very much for the board members.
Mr. Cowdy, you're welcome to stay online or jump off, whatever you like. We're going to be moving on to the next application. So
you didn't take a vote on this. There was a first, not a second.
Okay. Okay. So we have a motion. Do we have a second?
I'll second.
Okay. All in favor of moving this to the board for full approval, say aye.
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 Okay. Opposed? Okay. So motion carries. Moving forward to the board. Thank you. Thanks, Ms. Galvin.
Mr. Chair, if I may, it seems that we have another applicant who just joined us a moment ago, Balderrama Hernandez.
Okay.
I believe.
Okay. And Gabrielle Piat, I'm sorry if I didn't get that right. Correct me when we come here. So let's move on to Balderrama Hernandez. Dr. Davis Wilson, I believe you're the lead on that.
Yeah, Ms. Balderrama Hernandez passed her exam in January of 2021. She graduated in June of 2020 with a Master's of Science in ABA from Capella University. She did complete her supervision from January 2019 to December of 2020 for a total of just over 2,500 hours from a licensed supervisor here in Arizona. I have reviewed her application. I don't see any concerns, but I'd open that up to the committee for any additional comments.
I actually request that we move to executive session regarding this application, if we could get that arranged. Or do we need a motion and a second to move to that? Okay, so I'm making a motion that we move to executive session for discussion on this.
It would be for legal advice?
Correct.
And I'll second that.
Okay. All in favor, say aye.
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 All opposed? Nay. All right, so move to executive session.
Okay, Mr. Chair, I am moving into executive session. The committee members, Ms. Galvin, Ms. Folks and Ms. Michelson, I will stay in the public session.
Okay, so is there any further comment regarding this application this time?
Not at this time. Board staff, did Ms. Wilson make a motion to move it forward?
I didn't. Can we see the other application too and just move both of them, or do we need to do it separate?
I think we can review the other application as well.
Let's do it.
Okay.
All right, and let's see. Oh. All right, next is Gabrielle Piet. Sorry if I mispronounced the name. Please correct me on what the proper pronunciation would be if I did mess it up.
You got it correct. That was right.
Oh, excellent. Okay, so Dr. Davis Wilson, you're the lead on that.
Perfect. Ms. Piet passed her exam in October of 2020. She completed the ASU's Master's in Curriculum and Instruction, their ABA, online ABA, in May of 2020. She did 1,900 hours of supervision from the periods of March of 2019 to July of 2020, just over 1,900 hours, to be precise, all from licensed supervisors here in Arizona. I had just a couple of general remarks to make. One, on the first page, number three, the question is just not answered. So whether she prefers to have the home or the business address. So if we could work to just get that answered, that would be appreciated. And then she did answer yes to question number 14 related to termination from employment. She provided us supplemental information, including the response from the former employer. I think that the information is consistent with kind of the position that she was equally confused about about the circumstances, and the information that the employer provided kind of showed that this was not necessarily a parting that would affect her ability to practice. So I see no concerns with that and appreciate the thorough response. So my only recommendation would be that we just work with board staff to get number three answered, and I think everything else is good to go.
Okay. Any further discussion on that? Okay. So can we make a motion that moves forward with pending those? Okay, so Dr. Davis-Wilson, do you want to make the motion or?
Yeah, if we're going to do a motion, I'll do a motion on both applicants, Ms. Balderamo Hernandez and Ms. Piot, be moved to the full board for approval. With Ms. Piot, we would just need, prior to the full board meeting, that number 3 answered and returned back to us.
Okay. So all in favor of moving those two applications forward?
I will second.
Oh, yeah. Sorry. Did somebody second? Dr. Rafe? Okay. Thank you. All right. So all those who are in favor of moving the two applications forward to the board, say aye.
Aye.
Okay. Those opposed, say nay. Okay. Motion move forward then. Thank you.
Mr. Chair, committee members, if I could. I'm going to have to shut off my video. I keep getting an unstable internet warning, but I am here. I just know I'm going to be here.
Thanks, Ms. Falk. All right. Okay. Are there any other applicants that have joined us at this time? Okay. Let's move back on the agenda to agenda item 6. And if there's no one opposed, I would like to do cover 6 and 7 both in this discussion. Are there any issues with that? Okay, so regarding agenda item 6, discussion, consideration, possible action regarding complaints and recommendations of the board for complaint number 2052, Paige Huff, and discussion, consideration, possible action regarding recommendations of the board pertaining to approval or denial of behavior analyst application for Paige Huff. Paige Huff, Dr. Davey, you are the lead on both of those.
Mr. Chair?
Yes.
I will be recusing from agenda items 6 and 7.
Great, thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So, board members, obviously, this is part 2 of the discussion around these particular topics. And so I don't believe that I'll rehash the entire investigative report. We looked at that last time that looked over 2 separate complaints. I just remind you that we're here to discuss the second complaint as it pertains to Paige Huff today. The discussions that we've had there have really been focused on whether or not Ms. Huff is engaged in the unauthorized practice of behavior analysis and looking at some previous documentation from the website, some previous reports, some information that was provided with regard to supervision experiences with Ms. Lemon, who is an Arizona State licensed behavior analyst at the doctorate level. And so I just would like to just kind of reorientate everyone towards that. I think the discussion today is really for us to decide and to help Ms. Huff move on from whether or not during a certain period of time there was a Title Act violation. And some of the things that still stick out to me is concerning, and we shared this with Ms. Huff and her legal team as well, was the fact that she was listed as a supervisor for all the RBTs that were in her organization. Her signature showing up on various documents, which highlight the fact that she is a BCBA, and we appreciate the fact that that is something to be celebrated. The discussion, some of the comments last time we had this discussion was about that line between putting yourself out to the public as a board certified behavior analyst in the state of Arizona, and whether or not that confuses the public to believe that you are in fact licensed and able to practice as a behavior analyst in the state of Arizona. And so I will pause there with regard to one other point. There's also the issue that Ms. Huff had a transition from being a BCABA to a BCBA. And I think prior to that also being an RBT. So she has worked her way up through the national credentials. And now, in light of this complaint, we're having this discussion about the use of those credentials as well as her pending application. And so I'll pause there with my report. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
And I note that Ms. Huff and legal representation are here. Do either of you have any comments to make at this time?
Good morning. This is Attorney Mandy Carvis appearing with and on behalf of Ms. Huff, who's also appearing. In light of the extensive discussion with the board last time around, I don't intend to make any additional statement at this time. Ms. Huff submitted some additional documentation that was requested to the board relating to the licensure application. So at this point, if anyone has any follow-up questions for her, she's happy to address those, but I don't think we need to rehash everything that was extensively discussed last time, but I appreciate the opportunity.
I did want to say that I know that there was a lot of recommendations that were made, especially with our website and stuff. So I went through and we updated everything. Anybody who's pending licensure, it says they're pending licensure. The comment on the front page was removed and everything was kind of just reorganized to make sure that it is more accurately representing everybody. So we did take your feedback and we now have both parents signing treatment reports and a custody document that we've added and stuff like that. So we did take a lot of the feedback.
Committee, are there any questions for Ms. Huff at this time?
Yeah, can you, you or your counsel, discuss with us the listing on the RBT side? Previously, under the BACB's website, we shared this with you, that you are listed as their supervisor. And they are obviously practicing in the state of Arizona. And so one of the things I'm having a hard time wrapping my head around is how you're engaged in that in an ethical manner in the state that requires licensure.
For them, I mostly did their training. It was just not updating records. I went through and updated everything to put them under the accurate BCBAs. He's not on our website, but we have another LBA who works for us now, Isaac Smith, and stuff like that, who's in Arizona. So they're under the accurate people now. And I know most of them were when I trained them as a BCABA. So they were on for a while.
So go ahead, Dr. Wilson.
Sorry, Dr. Davey. The responsible party of the RBT certificate doesn't have to be a BCBA. The supervision in Arizona would still have to be by a licensed BCBA, but the responsible party can be by a BCABA or a BCBA. And also even the training and assessment per the BACB can be done by a designated individual. So it could even be like a second year grad student could do the training and the assessment. I think the piece in that though is then here in Arizona, they would have to be supervised doing all of those things. So I just want to make sure that we're capturing it, how the supervision looked, but that technically you could have a BCABA in that role as listed on the BACB.
And I take a little bit of exception with that comment, Dr. Wilson. I typically agree with you a lot. And in most cases, and I don't think this is a disagreement. I think it's a distinction that training, in my view, is behavior analytic practice. And I don't see how you can separate that kind of feedback loop that is required by the RBT documentation and the BACB and not call that process behavior analysis.
Well, and Dr. Davey, to clarify, I agree with you. It is behavior analytic, but that's why the matriculated grad student and or BCABA being supervised would be able to provide those services, provided they're able to prove that they're being supervised by an LBA in the provision of those services. So I agree with you. The difference is here in Arizona, that supervision would still have to be required, but it could still be done. For example, I could have a second year grad student in that role, provided I'm supervising them in that role.
No, I think my point is that in this case, if Ms. Huff was supervising them and being and providing training, she would not be the matriculated graduate student. She would have to have been a BCABA under the supervision of another BCBA, which I think we have come to the conclusion that she was under the supervision of Ms. Lemons. And so it's just, to me, that is a couple of degrees removed. But you know, your point is well taken, and I get concerned when we think of training not as behavior analytic, and in the fact that our training programs as behavior analysts are in fact data driven and hit, you know, the tenets of applied behavior analysis there. Good conversation. Thank you.
I wonder, and perhaps Dr. Davey, we're saying the same thing. I wonder if one way to clear up the confusion of just at sight what that role looks like would be to request the supervision documentation so that we could clearly say, hey, these were the tasks that were being supervised. So the feedback, not just the log, but what tasks were being addressed. So for example, when I meet with a supervisee, I have a meeting form that, you know, we fill out and we talk about what did I observe? What did I see? What did we go over? What, you know, so if I'm observing a BCABA or a grad student in that training role, I have supportive documentation to show that is the supervision that was being provided, and that goes in their supervision file. So I'm wondering if additional records regarding supervision documentation might clear some of that up a little bit.
So you're speaking kind of to like the Excel spreadsheet that Ms. Lemon sent us that hit each task that Ms. Huff was being supervised for. Is that what you're hinting at?
Yeah, and the additional like feedback forms.
Can I speak? Most of those people were done under Brandy Collins when she was my supervisor.
Which, thank you, Ms. Huff, I appreciate that. Then, Dr. Davey, then back to your concern, then that would confirm that there was not supervision by a licensed behavior analyst. And Ms. Huff, I appreciate you providing that clarification. I know that's a tough clarification to chime in on. I appreciate that.
Are there any further questions for Ms. Huff or counsel?
I mean, I think I just have the general question of like, through this whole process, Ms. Huff, which I know is excruciatingly painful, right? Like, obviously there's been some missteps, like, or you wouldn't, and I appreciate the candor, but what has been like, what is your takeaway from all of this? Like, what is it that you have come to realize, and what's the path forward for you in your view?
Honestly, I've thought about this a lot, especially like just from how confused I was about the Arizona like laws and stuff. So I've started going through your statutes and putting together some trainings and some PowerPoints to just try to like give everybody else the knowledge, but also know it like the most I can. When I was a supervisee, even with Sam, and when I was a BCABA, I just didn't know enough about your laws. And I don't think that's not brought up in school when you're out of state. And most BCBAs do online school, at least from what I've seen and stuff. So I feel like there's just this lapse in supervision of teaching people the different state requirements and making sure that if I am pushed forward to be an LBA, I'm teaching all my supervisees that, and anybody who's like curious in the field, and making sure that nobody goes through it myself. Like, I've gone through, you know, hours and hours of supervision and stuff, and I don't want that to happen to anybody else.
I appreciate that. Thank you.
Any further questions or comments? from the top.
You may want to ask Ms. Huff and Ms. Carvis if they have any comments before the committee starts deliberations, whenever that may be.
Well, Ms. Carvis, Ms. Huff, any further comments?
I'll just summarize, if I may. I think that Ms. Huff has shown that she has been responsive and reactive to the feedback that she and her husband received at the lengthy board meeting last time. She immediately took steps to rectify issues on the website that would potentially serve to confuse or mislead the public as to her status or the status of anyone else in their company. She also had, they've added additional forms that the board expressed that they were concerned about. She herself has undertaken self-study of statutes and regulations. She's open to more education in that regard. I think it's important for the board to be mindful of those things, and that's what you want from a licensee, as someone who is receptive and reactive to feedback. She obviously, as you all know, has worked very hard to get to the point where she is able to become licensed. That's very much her desire. She is happy to do that under any circumstance that the board would like of her in order to feel confident that she is adequately trained and supervised, and then ultimately when she's licensed can adequately train and supervise others. She again is willing to undertake additional education should this board require that of her. In summary, she has heard your comments, she's taken them seriously, and will continue to do so as a licensee if she is granted that opportunity. And we do appreciate the board's feedback and the willingness to discuss these items with her and provide her with the opportunity that she's worked so hard for. Thank you.
Ms. Carvis, Ms. Huff, any further comments?
No, basically the same thing. I'm willing to do whatever it takes, and I want to know enough so I can train others. Obviously, supervision of BCBAs isn't something to take lightly, especially as a mom who's had multiple BCBAs in my house. Like, it's very important what we do, and I want to make sure that whatever we do is the right way. And obviously, that's why this committee is here, is to show us and help us do that.
Thank you. All right, the committee will now begin the deliberation. Please note that deliberation is the time for the committee members to discuss the cases among themselves without interruptions from complainants, licensees, or attorneys representing licensees or applicants in this case. We will deliberate with complaint number 2052 against Paige Huff. Dr. Davey, do you want to begin the take the lead on the deliberations? Actually, Dr. Davey, I'm gonna come back and have you do that, but I would like to move to executive session, and then we'll come back and begin the deliberations.
And is that executive session for legal advice?
Correct. Yeah. Do we have a motion to move to executive session?
So move.
Yeah. I'll second.
Second. Okay. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Okay, move to executive session. Okay, it was noted that the complainant's mother is present. Would you like to make any comments regarding this?
Hi. I feel that for families, it's important to know who's working with their children, and that includes supervisors as well as the RBTs that are coming to the home and the treatment plans that are being provided and from who they're being provided from. I understand that Paige did everything that she needed to do and got the feedback from you guys, which I really appreciate. I feel that if a lot of other families knew that she wasn't licensed, they probably wouldn't feel comfortable either. To be honest, it's a very difficult topic for me just because there was some consequence from that organization. I'm not saying from Only Page specifically, but just from the way things were handled in my situation with my son. I did have a few concerns that I did bring up to Paige and to Dylan, and it was very hard to get those resolved because, unfortunately, in my position, there wasn't anyone else I can go to since they are married and they were the only owners there and the only individuals working with my son. So that made it very difficult for me. And I honestly, I didn't like the way things were handled. I didn't get an apology. I didn't get any follow-up from anything after that. My son was left without services. There was a gap. Luckily, I was able to find another organization to put him in. But I feel it was very unfair and unethical for, you know, and this was brought up in an email that I sent to them too. I felt that whatever personal thoughts they had of me as an individual, which I don't feel I gave them any reasoning behind that, but you know, everyone has the right to feel and have their own opinion. But regardless, the main focus was on my son, and that was really their client and who they were helping out. So for them to make it personal to where they had to, you know, dismiss my son and disregard his needs, I felt is where the issue was. As far as making a decision for today, I do feel that is up to the board. You guys have gone through this. You guys know what's best on the professional side of it. I don't have any issue with Paige. I don't agree with the way things were done. I do feel I did take my time to look at the website. I do feel that she did what she had to do to make the changes with the feedback that she did receive. One thing that I was kind of questioning is she keeps stating that she didn't know the laws in Arizona. She didn't know, you know, certain regulations, but even as a customer or as a client who looks into these organizations, I am aware of the BACB. I do go on there. I do read the regulations and what is expected from a company. She's also with somebody who is licensed in the state of Arizona, who knows the regulations that she works very closely with. So, I mean, I kind of disagree with that stuff, but at the end of the day, I do feel that she made the changes that she needed to make, or at least take some of the steps that are needed to better herself. And, you know, learning from this situation, I think will save a lot of issues in the future. So whatever you guys feel is best, my main concern is obviously my child and other families to not go through what I went through. But if she's taking the steps and she's willing to better herself and take this as a learning experience, you know, that is appreciated by me. And I'm sure that's appreciated by other families as well.
Thank you. Ms. Hubb, Ms. Carvis, any further comments before we begin deliberation?
I don't have any further comments. Again, we appreciate your time and consideration, and know that you guys will make the best decision that you can based on all the information that's available.
All right. The comments I made earlier still stands. The time for the committee to deliberate without interruption. Dr. Davey, will you begin deliberations?
Maybe I will if I unmute myself. And thank you, Mr. Chair. I think to kind of begin the discussion, I think I'm just going to kind of summarize the overall concerns that I have as a committee member. And I think I'll start off by saying, you know, to the complainants point, you know, our job is that to protect the public. That is our overriding mission as members of this committee. Yes, we happen to know about the laws and the statutes and the BACB compliance code and so on and so forth, but our job is really to task ourselves with protecting the public. And so with that in mind, my concerns are really focused around two areas. One has to do with just general discussions that we had with regard to the first complaint, which was had to deal with Mr. Huff, but Mrs. Page is embedded in that as well, and that's around her professionalism, just in the way she was interacting with via email with individuals. You know, those are things that are difficult to you know, read into emails and try to understand where someone's trying to come from. And I think that you know, I think each of us on the committee understands that we've gotten more nuanced in our careers of how we communicate and when we communicate. And you know, that is something that I think many of our young behavior analysts in the field probably most likely struggle with, and will have difficult lessons that they learn through those communications. I think it also has to do with some general ethical concerns, mainly on the BACB code of compliance side, just around some integrity and some other issues there that are a concern. The second piece, and I don't mean to make light of that by moving on quickly, but you know, in deliberations, I want to get us all started. The second piece is still my concern that there's a period of time in the state of Arizona where Ms. Huff was engaged as a behavior analyst. And you know, I appreciate the nuances of going from RBT to BCABA to BCBA while having a supervisor that isn't licensed in the state, then having a supervisor that is licensed in the state. And you know, my personal opinion of that is, yes, that is, there is lots of, you know, ins and outs, lots of weaving going on there. But the reality is that the state's rules and statutes are clear about what needs to happen there. But I do have, you know, I do understand that, or I do believe after hearing the testimony that this was not malicious or in some way trying to skirt these issues. I think it was more of ignorance of the statutes and the laws that we have here. And as we have all come to know, ignorance is not an excuse. And so I still reserve that I have concerns about this. And I'll pause there, Mr. Chair, and listen to my colleagues' thoughts on the matters.
Other committee members.
Mr. Chair, I do echo a lot of the concerns that Dr. Davey has presented. And I think that in addition to protecting the public, I think that, you know, really understanding the impact that this has on families or specific case, I think is really important in how, at least in my opinion, how we move forward with this, because the hardest part I think about being a behavior analyst and how we're trained is that a lot of what we do is very black and white. There's a right and a wrong way to do it. And then we get into this kind of gray area of ethics, and perception matters and feelings matter and impact on families matter. And those sorts of things are a little bit harder to quantify and come in and say, this is how we resolve this. Because at the end of the day, there is a family that has been impacted by these actions. And so I echo those concerns. I'm still trying to wrap my head around where to go next with them, but I do want to make sure that moving forward, we're thinking from both sides of it. Yes, there have been absolute changes made and lots of great discussions had, but I also want to keep at the forefront that we do have an individual that's been adversely impacted by actions.
Thank you, Dr. Davis Wilson. Any other comments from committee members?
I would echo any of the concerns that have already been shared. I think to Dr. Davies' point, there is a lot to know, a lot to ensure that you understand, and that is the responsibility. And so I think it is very important that individuals take responsibility seriously and they do their due diligence to understand all of those requirements and what that means, how that becomes executed and communicated to clients and family members. And I do appreciate that there have been changes made I think it's still very important to continue to get support and guidance so that you are staying up to date and aware of all that is required and expected, because those things have meaning and are important. And to the last point, an impact on our clients and our family and the public.
Mr. Stenhoff, Dr. Stenhoff, Mr. Chair, Dr. Stenhoff, I think one of the things, and I just want to just say it as we kind of navigate where to go next with it, I'm struggling with, I 100% agree, you're in Arizona, you should know the Arizona laws, you're running a business in Arizona, you're running a business with other licensed professionals who should know the laws, but you also have two individuals who should also know the laws supervising you. And so my concerns go beyond just Ms. Huff, but also this is an issue, and we've seen it before, is where's the accountability on the supervisors? And if we're going to have, you know, this stance, and I don't have an answer, but I guess it's where I'm frustrated. If we're going to say, well, there was a period of time that practice without a license occurred, and it was your responsibility to know that, well, there was another individual that was also practicing without a license. And where do we then kind of take that over and say, hey, between this time and this time, you were providing behavior analytics supervision in the state of Arizona without a license. And we can't overlook that. So I think the complexity of it is kind of where I have kind of the difficulty in this, is because I don't think that it's isolated to Ms. Huff, but I also think whatever stance we take, I think we have to articulate why we wouldn't apply the same standard to the supervisor who is not, you know, who essentially had a period of time without a license and was practicing, and then making sure that we're adequately addressing this moving forward, because this isn't the first time we've seen this. I mean, we're constantly, and I think I expressed it in the last time, I teach to this in the ethics class, and my ethics students were in this same boat as I'm teaching to them not to be in this boat. And so I think that this is a very complex issue. And I think that's where I'm struggling with how to move forward. If we're talking solely about that period of time of practicing without a license, I definitely think that the correspondence, professionalism, some of the parent concerns, those I'm a little bit more concrete in, you know, what should have probably happened and what didn't happen and what we can do moving forward. But that period of practicing without a license, I'm just struggling with the best way to address it.
I hear you.
And I agree with my fellow committee members as well, that there was just this sense of pervasive lack of knowledge of what the code, the BACB code stipulates, and then in addition, statute and behavior analyst rules, not only by supervisors, but by the supervisees, but as Dr. Davis Wilson mentioned, also by a co-owner in a company who oversees behavior analytic activities as well. And Ms. Huff wearing two hats, one is a supervisee, and one is the business owner of a behavior analytic organization. So it is concerning, and this is also not just within the company itself and within this complaint. It's a problem that does cut across several companies. However, we are just involved in a discussion about this one complaint at this time. And I agree, it's difficult to kind of identify exactly where to move forward, but I think there needs to be some, and Dr. Rates alluded to this too, is further discussion or further education about this moving forward as well. I know with a complaint number 2051, there was a recommendation for that too. And I, um, and I think that may be in order as well for this, for the complaint 2052 as well. So I think that also needs to be part of the consideration. And maybe, as a committee, I think we need to further discuss at this time, what are some possible actions that we can, that would make sense and be logical moving forward too. So maybe we've mentioned in general, but if we were to take it down to very specifics, what can we delineate some of those areas of concern based on code or statute, and then move towards a motion of how we want to move forward to this.
So, Mr. Chair, prior to us to delineating those facts, and I think we need to list out the areas that we have our concern, do we want to think about moving beyond the current complaint and taking up the license? The current complaint, taking what we've learned through the process and working with Ms. Huff, and really setting the complaint aside and going to the license and talking about what the future holds there and what that may look like.
As a point of order, Ms. Galvin, is there any issue with us moving to that discussion?
Oh, you're muted, Ms. Galvin.
You may proceed in that manner if you wish.
Do we need to ask her counsel if they have any concerns about that?
No.
Okay.
Okay, so.
Go ahead.
Yeah,
I was going to say, just so we're clear, so essentially what we're saying is we'll resolve the complaint through the actual process of reviewing the application, right?
That would be my suggestion, yes.
Okay. I'm amenable to moving forward. I think that within the discussion, I think we should have somewhat of a clear understanding of some of those issues, because within the discussion of the application, if those aren't clearly delineated, then the discussion moving forward with possibly moving forward with the application can't be very clear until those are examined or at least laid out to an extent.
I'm fine either way. I mean, I think we can get the list and then move forward if that's what you'd like.
Any other comments on that?
Mr. Chair, if I may, perhaps what we could do, and I'm not sold on this, but just to get us started, I'm thinking about the other complaints, and perhaps what we could do is use how we adjudicated that complaint as kind of the template for a direction to move forward. And that would be starting with a non-disciplinary order for education. And that, I don't even know that we need to recreate the wheel too much, but
no, I agree.
Even if we look at all of the codes, and I don't know if Ms. Michelson has them available, but if we look at all of the things that we cited in the previous one, I think that would be helpful. I really can't express enough how important I think it is for this organization to seek outside consulting to oversee some of their practices. But I don't know that, I'm torn on whether or not that needs to be done through a consent agreement requiring it as a disciplinary action. And I think the reason why I'm torn is because I'm in the business consulting realm, and many new young professionals are in this exact same boat. And I just worry. A part of me thinks, well, we could set precedents by doing like a consent agreement that would require the consulting and oversight and supervision. But another part of me thinks that, you know, we've got a young professional who is wanting to commit to that learning. And she's not the only one out there with these same skill gaps, right? Like this is a very significant issue, to the point where even the BACB is restricting supervision, you know, upon immediate certification. And I think we're going to continue to see those sorts of things come about because of how this goes. So my suggestion would be that we just maybe start with the codes that were already cited in what was that 2051, because I think that we're looking at the same concerns, and if you can read those off, then maybe that'll give us just kind of a starting point.
I would want to be sure that the record is clear that we're adjudicating this complaint. We don't want to bring up the previous one. I would just ensure if you need reference to code sites or statutory sites, that's fine, but they are two separate cases.
Absolutely. And there might be additions or removals. I just think it's maybe just a starting point.
Committee member, any further discussion regarding that? Okay. So Ms. Mickelson, would you be able to read those, or do you have access to those?
I apologize, committee members. What codes are you referring to? I don't remember this being discussed at the last meeting.
Look in the minutes. We're referring to the codes that we discussed when we reviewed both complaints the last meeting. So we adjudicated one complaint.
The BACB Code of Ethics?
Yeah.
As well as statutes related, because I think we had some unprofessional conduct.
Let's see. Well, for Mr. Hupp's complaint, the committee recommended a non-disciplinary letter of concern with the Order of Education, which does not list violations because it's non-disciplinary. However, in the letter of concern, it indicated that the following sections of the code were not followed: 2.0, 2.2, 2.15 A, C, and D, and 4.1 A.
The readout list, anything, Ms. Mickelson, under 3290.91.12?
Nothing would be cited from there because this was a non-disciplinary action, so there are no violations found. So if the committee did find potential violations for HUF, they would need to discuss that and determine here today.
Very good. That's the non-disciplinary.
Dr. Davey, would you like to have that added as a talking point?
No, I think the issues here are slightly different in that I think the BACB code that says you must follow state and local jurisdiction rules and laws is the one I think needs to be inserted with regard to this kind of weaving in and out of appropriate supervision. And I think that to me is one of the clear ones. And then I think the other ones around professional conduct that I believe Dr. Davis Wilson has alluded to are also critical to be listed there.
All right. Dr. Davey, would you mind discussing the application at this time?
Yeah, I mean, the application, I feel, has been kind of the looming part of this, right, behind the scenes. And so let me open up the actual application and give it its proper adjudication. Please hold. So Ms. Huff has applied for a licensure in the state of Arizona. She lists that she became a board certified behavior analyst on 11/30 of 2019. She also lists that she has received a license from the state of Texas as well. Previously, she was also a BCABA. She has completed the application in its entirety, listing Capella University, where she received her master's in science and psychology with a subject area of applied behavior analysis. She's completed the second section with regard to her experience in that manner, as well as question 21, 22 looked good. She listed her supervised experience towards supervision at her organization, Adventure ABA. She listed Samantha Lemons, BCBA, LBA, who was also licensed in the state and has provided us additional supervision experience information to collaborate her time and her hours. And with that, there were no additional issues in her application other than the pending complaint.
Maybe if I may, to try to center us, what is the committee's desire on the complaint? Do you believe that the complaint should be dismissed, or do you believe that there are potential violations?
I believe there's, in my opinion, I'll say what I believe. I think there's potential violations. I don't believe any that rise to a statute issue at this time. And so a non-disciplinary letter of concern is where I'm leaning. I would be willing to make that motion for the complaint. And that is also with the asterisk that we will deal with the shortcomings of the applicant's behavior during the period prior to the licensure application being put forward. When we move forward with the license.
So if you consider the complaint alone and the fact that she was unlicensed, a letter of concern is reserved for those to have a license. A cease and desist order may be appropriate if you are taking the complaint and adjudicating that in and of itself. If you believe that a letter of concern is appropriate for the unlicensed activity, then we can move that to kind of the complaint or the application file, the application line. And if you are going to grant her an application, a letter of concern could be part of that issuance of the license for her unlicensed activity that occurred previous to her application.
So if I'm following you, lots of moving parts. So if I'm following you, we move beyond the complaint and get to the license and deal with everything in the license application. If that's how what the committee's doing.
If you do not believe that the complaint should be dismissed outright.
I would agree that the complaint should not be dismissed outright. So that would move us then. And I don't know that a cease and desist would be appropriate either, being that during the period of time of the complaint, there wasn't the unlicensed practice. But also that the other concerns, I think, are concerns that do lend to the integrity and the skill set of the applicant. And so I think that how we address it, I would want to address it in the application.
Do you believe the conduct that occurred pre-warrant denying Ms. Huff's application for licensure?
I do not.
No.
I don't think so either.
Okay, so I'm hearing that the complaint should not be dismissed and her application for licensure should not be denied. Therefore, I'm assuming that kind of infers that you are willing to grant her application for licensure, but have sufficient concerns because of the application that issuing her license may come with some practice restrictions or obligations on her part as a new licensee that we could put into a consent agreement. She and her attorney have stated to you on the record that they're essentially willing to do what it takes, undertake some remedial action. If she's granted her license, they understand that that's a possibility and they're willing to do that. And if I have misspoken, Ms. Kravis will let me know. So if you want to come up with some terms, understanding, Ms. Huff, we will approve your application, but we need to impose X, Y, and Z to deal with the conduct that was raised in the complaint and your conduct during the unlicensed provision, at the time of unlicensed provision of service.
And Ms. Galvin, do we need to, wrap up the complaint prior and then move into the application?
No, we're doing it kind of as a package. We're saying that we're not dismissing this complaint, and your actions under the complaint are leading us to grant your license, but there's going to be some condition.
Okay.
So I would need you to tell me what those concerns are, what facts that are that concerned you that led to potential violations, then list the potential violations. So there was a time where she practiced without a license. That's one fact. Is there other conduct that occurred during that time period that could impact her qualifications for licensure at this time? I believe there was mention that she essentially left AA with AA's son without alternatives or selections of other providers that could provide services. Was there an abandonment?
I think on that one, my concern would just be that there was a licensed supervisor who was technically responsible for that. And that was included in our thoughts with that licensed supervisor. One of the things, and I was looking at the code because I'm trying to wrap my brain around, but I think 1.02 on boundaries of competence might cover the concerns that I have. And again, most of those come down to operating in the capacity as an owner of the business, in that it's clear that not knowing the state laws, the practice without the license, the content of the emails, the policies and or lack of policies were all indicative of work being done outside of the scope of competence. And that would be probably the most important area of remediation, is if you're going to own a business, you either need somebody competent enough to provide those services, or you need to develop those competencies. And that would be kind of the nature of some of the remedial action that I'd want to see, is assurance that as a business owner in this capacity, there's a level of competency for the services being provided, especially being that she's disclosed that her role is primarily administrative now. And so being, the leadership competencies, which actually aren't in task list 4. So it'll be new in task list 5, but leadership competencies aren't in task list 4. And therefore, without additional training and supervision and oversight, someone wouldn't be able to just say that's within their scope of practice. And so I think that for me, that boundaries of competence, it speaks quite loudly on areas of concern.
And do you think, I forget what number was that? That was for
1.02 is the ethical code that she cited.
Do you think, Dr. Wilson, what about under 5.0, supervisory competence and some of the information there with kind of understanding those issues?
I agree.
Any reaction to that? Yeah. And I think that it's not perfect, but I think we have to have something to that effect, that the reality of the situation is that there's some concerns around the supervision piece.
Yeah. And I think supervisory competence is definitely that area, because we're looking at the fact that that there again was no license. The role, the watered down role of how the RBT piece works, all of that, I think would be like your concerns earlier, Dr. Davey, I think they'd be captured under 5.01 as well.
And then that ties into the statutory violation of 32-2091 DD, violating an ethical code.
Correct.
Are there any other facts that move the committee to recommend a violation of any other provision of statute or the ethical code?
Seems like with the second potential set of facts regarding the lack of statute knowledge, the content and tone of emails, and the lack of dovetail into a violation of 1.02 and 5.01. If those are the potential findings of fact and conclusions of law, am I getting a consensus if that's where you're falling or landing? Okay. You have stated that there's a consensus that this doesn't justify denial of her license. What is it that you believe, if you were to grant her license, would remediate the newly licensed behavior analyst to resolve those issues that you have focused on?
I'm sorry, did we get integrity in there? You said 1.04.
1.01.
Yeah, the integrity was the other one I had on my list, which is 1.04.
You're looking at D.
I'm looking at D, behavior analyst. Behavior conforms to the legal and ethical codes of the social and professional community of which they are a member.
And so what would the facts that would support that obligation?
Again, the operating at time out, proper licensure or supervision.
And I don't know that it rises to this, but I'm going to say it with hopes that if the committee doesn't think it rises, that it's something that can still be taken into consideration as feedback. But 1.05F, regarding conflicts that may interfere with effectiveness, one of the things that the complainant mentioned is this idea that there wasn't a path for grievance. So there wasn't a path to file anything beyond that, because if I had a concern with the owner of the organization, or with Ms. Huff, like, she's also the owner of the organization. If I had a concern with Mr. Huff, well, who would I go to? Ms. Huff? Well, they're married and there's a conflict there. And so I don't know that I could articulate either way, but I think that it's a little misleading when it says personal problems, because it's not really a personal problem per se, but it is a conflict. If you are a business owner with your spouse and you don't have a grievance policy that allows for families to know. So for example, you know, my grievance policy may be you contact me, and if I'm not sufficient, you contact the owner. And if that's not sufficient, by the way, here's the information for the licensing board, so that there's some clear process for that. And with a lot of businesses that have consultants involved or any other type of oversight, that is kind of their grievance process. And so I don't know that it rises to the concern, but I do think it's something as part of the remediation that needs to be considered, as we have this obligation to avoid this conflict. And by being a business owner with your spouse, there's innate conflict that's going to arise. What policies are in place to allow for those conflicts to be resolved without interfering with the effectiveness of treatment?
And I hear you saying that while it may not rise to a level of a violation, the committee has noted that that could be a potential issue in the future and that would recommend addressing that.
Much better articulated. Yes.
I'm just taking notes of all. So I'm just trying to help the committee. If we believe that we have articulated all of your concerns and the facts that support the potential violations, now you need to decide what it is you want to recommend to the board. It is adjudicating this complaint, granting her a license, but listing these facts and potential violations as part of the consent agreement. What do you believe is going to remedy your concerns and put the newly licensed behavior analyst on the correct professional course and protect the public?
I certainly think there are some professional development opportunities, but I would also think that some coaching mentorship would be appropriate. And I say that because I think that is something recommended in this situation. We may want to have that. And I think it'd be helpful given that has been some mentorship and supervision. And unfortunately, it was not enough to help support some of the things that we're talking about today. So some oversight of the qualifications of that mentorship and support might be something important for us to consider here today.
Yeah, I would say that mentorship needs to come from someone outside of the organization and so not the current supervisor, and someone that I believe that the committee should probably vet. I think has the ability to vet. I would also say that I would encourage membership in something like CASP or going through BHCOE or joining APBA or ABAI for some to be up to put the speed on some of the ethical considerations of operating a business. Since that is, you're in this dual track. You are going to be a BCBA, and if this goes through, be an LBA, but you're also going to be a business owner. And there are competing contingencies that each of us that has been in those situations, that you are going to have to seek others' advice and not be just part of the group think of those that are around you and actively going out and being a part of the CASP listserv or attending some of their calls or their presentations to be able to understand that what are some possible remedies to those situations as they present themselves. I would just strongly encourage you not to make these decisions in a vacuum, and to really press yourself to get involved with one or all of the organizations that I just mentioned to help move yourself and your husband and your agency and the families you serve along.
So if I may, the first thing that you would like to see would be a practice monitor, which is can be typical in this area. Someone that would meet with the respondent to review her practice as a behavior analyst, but also kind of the operation of the business and how those two roles kind of coincide. This often is a term of probation. And so how long do you envision or suggest that this probation with a practice monitor run?
Is precedent typically 1 year when we've done this on the psych side?
The option to end it earlier, right?
Mm-hmm. It varies, really. I've seen longer periods of probation. It seems like the probation is typically a minimum of 1 year.
I think that's appropriate and gives us the time to, it gives Ms. Huff the time to educate herself, become the expert in Arizona state statutes and rules and laws and behavior analysts, ethic codes, and come forward and demonstrate that to this board. I mean, I think whether it's recognized or not, the board wants you to be the best behavior analyst you can possibly be in our state. We need behavior analysts in the state. Families need behavior analysts in the state, but they also need them to be quality and to understand our ethical obligations. And so I think the year period to make those kinds of strides in her professional career as well as her agency's operations is would make more sense in a shorter period.
So I'm hearing that you're requiring probation with a practice monitor for a minimum period of 12 months. This practice monitor would be board approved. It is someone that must be outside of the organization who has no business or personal relationship with the respondent and who has not been a previous supervisor. The practice monitor and the respondent are to address areas of deficiency that are noted in this consent agreement. Typically, the practice monitor provides quarterly reports to the board. And in this case, we can say to the committee as well that informs the board and the committee of the respondent's progress in the practice monitoring, and if there are any areas of concern. The respondent, of course, is responsible for all costs and fees associated with this. We typically start out that the respondent and the practice monitor meet for 2 hours each session, and we require 2 sessions per month. And that can be reduced after 6 months upon the recommendation of the practice monitor. These are kind of standard terms. Is this so far agreeable with the committee?
I believe so.
Are there any other conditions of this consent agreement that you would like to see, whether it's you have everything from a letter of concern to a censure to civil penalties to continuing education, et cetera?
So I think there are two other things that I'd like to see. I think the continuing ed piece around ethics and practice is something that needs to be a part of this. Mm-hmm. And so, Dr. Stenhoff, you're our resident academic. How many hours do you think we should be looking at? Knowing that the ethics classes that are available, I mean, we can't stipulate, we can strongly say which ones we want her to take, but because we can't say ethics, right? We have to just say continuing ed.
No, you can say ethics that address a particular area of concern. You can't direct her to a course.
Gotcha.
But X number of hours within what period of time, and are those hours, is she permitted to apply them to her continuing education that's required by law? Given that this is a disciplinary action, they are typically in addition to what is required for renewal.
So I would say in addition, and the areas I feel like they need to address are the one, the responsible conduct of a behavior analyst. I'll just list them as BACB guidelines, 1.0, 2.0, given the initial complaint, and 5.0. Under supervision. Those are the three that come to my mind. Other committee members may have others.
And how many hours? And they're typically pre-approved, Ms. Huff and Ms. Carvis, that before you take the course, you would submit them to staff and the chair of the committee would approve them. And so how many hours?
Given those three areas, I would like to see an additional, you know, if it's going to be spread across those, I don't know if I have others, but at least three credits in each of those areas. Others may have stronger feelings.
So Dr. Davey, you're suggesting that three credits across the different classes, meaning like three continuing credits.
Yeah, total of nine from the three I identified. There may be others that on other areas. But I thought 1.0, 2.0, and 5.0. And again, those may be intermixed, but, you know, and I would say that those 9 hours cannot be used for standard reapplication purposes.
Obviously, they can be done through distance education, given our circumstances. And would she have the entire 12 months of probation to complete them?
I think on the CEUs, we'd do shorter. That would also give her something to talk about with her mentor.
So within 6 months?
Committee members, chime in if you're disagreeing with this.
I don't disagree. I guess for me, I just can't express enough the importance of the practice monitor role. And perhaps the practice monitor, obviously it wouldn't be in the consent agreement, but would also be providing some guidance around additional professional development areas that would be beneficial. Because I think in this case, it's hard to narrow it down, because especially when you get into leadership topics and business ownership topics, there's so much to cover. And so I would just hope that the practice monitor would be skilled enough as a practice monitor to essentially do a needs assessment within the practice and make decisions based on that assessment to guide professional development. So with that being said, I think that what you're suggesting, Dr. Davey, is sufficient. I don't think that we need more or less, and I would caution too much more, because I wouldn't want to do too much more and then the practice monitor be like, cool, that you had to do all this professional development in these areas. Those aren't your areas that you need professional development in. And I want to be cognizant of the fact that we are talking about an individual, and I know that this is just how it works, and it's just kind of the nature of the game, but we're talking about an individual who has completed supervision twice, which has a cost, right? It has a substantial cost associated with it. And now we're saying you also need a practice monitor and you need these CEUs. And so I would hate to guide her on professional development too much so that she then has to add even more when the consultant gets involved. And so I just want to be cognizant. I mean, this is somebody who has taken steps that have, you know, been costly, because I know that supervision isn't cheap. And this would be an additional cost associated with all of that. So I think nine is probably sufficient.
And I want to get back to with respect to Dr. Davey's recommendation about membership in a professional organization, about operating a business. And we can put that in the consent agreement. We can't order that, but we can just note that it is the committee's recommendation that such an organization be joined, or at least investigated. But have I captured correctly the committee's recommendation to the board? And if I have, Ms. Carvis, my view is that if this passes between now and the recommendation going to the board, we might be able to craft this consent agreement. And if you're willing, have it signed so the board sees that your intent is to enter into this consent agreement, and that would save some kind of drafting and negotiating on the back end.
We would certainly be willing to do that, and I think that makes things easier if the board knows that among the committee and the potential licensee that we already have an agreement. So we would be agreeable to doing that as well.
I don't know if you want me to sort of put this into a motion, or not that I would be making a motion, but summarizing what I believe the committee has moved forward, unless Jennifer, if you want to do that.
I If you can summarize, then we can form the motion.
Yeah.
Okay. So my understanding of what the board, the committee has articulated today is that you have concerns with the period of time that Ms. Huff practiced as a behavior analyst without benefit of licensure, that you believe her lack of requirements under state law and state regulation, her communication with parents around the content and tone of emails to parents, the lack of policies and procedures within the organization of which she is an owner, her overall, this would impact the ethical code of 1.02, the lack of competencies, 5.01 and 1.04. This would all be a violation of 32-20091 double D as it relates to those ethical violations. That would also include 1.05F, the conflicts of interest. And that is supported by the testimony of AA that there, while there's no obviously statutory prohibition of a husband and wife ordering, owning a business, there was no path for a parent to file a formal grievance that would avoid that conflict of interest between husband and wife. There was nowhere else for the parent to go. The order would call for a minimum period of probation of 12 months with a practice monitor who is board approved. The practice monitor shall not have a financial or personal relationship with the respondent, cannot be someone within the organization, and cannot be someone with whom she had a previous supervisory relationship with. They are, the practice monitor is to address the areas of concern and the deficiencies noted by the committee, including addressing potential opportunities for professional development for the respondent. The respondent and the practice monitor are to meet 2 hours per session for 2 sessions per month for at least the 6 months. And then after that, upon the recommendation of the practice monitor, those sessions, the length and frequency of the sessions may be reduced. The practice monitor submit quarterly reports to the committee. So the committee is apprised of the respondent's progress during monitoring. The respondent within the 6 months from the effective date of the consent agreement is to take 9 hours of continuing education. It may be done by distance learning. These are in addition to the hours required for the renewal of her soon to be issued license. And generally the CE should address the ethical violations and code cited in the Order 1.04, 2.01, and 5.01.
Thank you, Ms. Galvin. Do we have a motion then?
Just one clarification on that last list. 2.01, 5.01, and then I think you said 1.04. Yeah, and integrity. Thank you. Okay.
And those will be pre-approved, myself, so don't take anything till you get approval from the board by the chair of the committee.
Okay.
And Ms. Galvin, does our motion includes both the complaint and the motion to move forward with the application, correct? Yeah.
Okay. You would be granting her license. It's immediately put on probation.
Okay, thank you. All right, so do we have a motion?
Do you want to include a provision so it doesn't have to come back to the board? I don't think this will come into play, but we typically give them like 14 days to review the consent agreement. And if it's not signed, this will be a recommendation to the board that then the application will be denied.
Yes.
Okay.
So that would be part of the motion.
Yeah.
And also, as I don't know if it would be part of the motion, but I also think, well, it would be part of the motion to also direct board staff upon completion of the signed consent agreement to notify both the Texas Licensing Board and the BACB.
Hey, who took the best notes?
You know what? You could just say so moved, and I would be good with that.
So moved.
All right. Do we have a second?
Second.
Any further discussion?
Okay, and then we will, Dr. Stenhoff, need a roll call vote.
But with the further discussion, I mean, I think all of us want to just convey to this topic. Listen, this is, as I said earlier, this is not easy. This is not the glorious part of being on this committee. And our movements here are deliberate. Like we have many mechanisms and many levers we can pull in this committee. And I want to impress upon you that the apparatus that we have put in motion for you in that motion are to assist you. They're not, I don't want you to see them as punitive. There was many other things we could have done that were punitive. I think I'll speak for myself, the committee can agree or disagree, but I think you have a bright future ahead of you, both your organization, your husband, but you're going to need to understand that there are a multitude of facets that come into play as a behavior analyst, as an owner of a behavior analytic agency. And I do believe that the course we've set out for you is not the end, it is the beginning for you. And you have to view it as such. You need to embrace the idea that you are going to continually be learning. And it's not just about learning about schedules of reinforcement, it's about learning how to operate a business and how to interact with relationships, both professional and personal, how to have interpersonal skills with families, to work with funders, to work with stakeholders. This is not something they teach you in class. This is not something that you can read a book about. This is going to be kind of around the life lessons and working with that mentor, being a part of an organization. And so I hope you take the movements here by the committee in that spirit. Thank you.
Yeah, I would just agree wholeheartedly. And we really do hope that everything that we're putting in place will lead to your success and the ability of excellent services for more individuals.
Mr. Chair, I just want to add, for Ms. Huff, this is hard for you too. And please know that we recognize that. And we see that you have a desire to grow. And I think that that is echoed, from the other committee members as well, is that this is a path to a bright future. And that, again, kind of the things that obviously we have a role in taking into consideration the emotions and feelings and whatnot of the complainants, but also please know that we also understand that this has been very hard for you as well. And that all of this is intended to guide you and support you and move you and your business in a direction that is going to help you long term. And I think that I'm hopeful that looking back on this, several years from now, you're going to be very grateful for this experience and will be obviously very, very grateful to have had this opportunity to provide you an opportunity to rehabilitate and learn new skills and become a better behavior analyst. So thank you very much for your time being here and putting forth, you've made vulnerable statements, you've been vulnerable in your emotions, and please know that those aren't going unnoticed.
Ms. Huff, I agree with the committee members. Take this, learn, and go do socially significant, important things for society, for the betterment of everybody that you're working with. That's what you're going to do, and just keep doing it, okay?
Thank you, guys.
So we need to do a
roll call
vote. A roll call vote. Does Ms. business folks, can you lead that, or do I lead that, Ms. Galvin, or?
Maybe Ms. Michelson or Ms. Pekkanen.
Okay.
Mr. Chair, I'm prepared to do the roll call vote if you'd like.
Okay.
Dr. Stenhoff?
Aye.
Dr. Davis-Wilson?
Yes.
Dr. Davey?
Aye.
And Dr. Rates?
Yes.
Ms. Denton is recused. The vote is 4-0, so the motion carries.
And then Ms. Kravis and I will get together, Carvis, I'm sorry, we'll get together in the next few weeks and hammer out an agreement.
Thank you.
May we have a comfort break, please?
Ms. Galvin, actually, I was just going to propose that. So, and then, yes, comfort break, let's say 10 minutes. Is that adequate for everybody?
Perfect.
Okay.
Thank you, everyone. We appreciate your time and your thoughts. And Ms. Huff will make the most of the opportunity that you have offered to give her today. So thank you very much. We appreciate it.
Okay.
And I'm sorry, I have a quick question for you guys. So I know earlier when I was giving the testimony, I believe I mentioned my name. I don't believe I mentioned my son's name, but from what I remember in the last meeting, I think we were supposed to refer to my initials. Is that something that will affect me or this public, I guess?
Ma'am, you did not provide your name this time around, but staff can go back and ensure that. And if you did, they can redact that portion of the audio.
Okay, perfect. And also, I just want to say thank you so much for your time and really going through everything, not just for myself, but for Paige as well, and kind of seeing both sides of everything that was going on. I know that's a lot of work and a lot of considerations that you guys have to look into and paperwork, and I could only imagine. So I just want to say thank you so much for taking care of me and my family, and as well as doing what's best for Adventure ABA and to help them better themselves in the future for other families as well.
Okay, so 10 minute break. Can somebody bring Ms. Denton back into the thing? All right, thank you, Ms. Hockenheim. So let's move on to agenda number 8, discussion, consideration, and possible action regarding recommendation of the board pertaining to approval of behavior analyst applicants. Next applicant is Sierra Caldry. Dr. Race, you're the lead on that.
Yes, thank you. So Ms. Coldren received her BCBA in February of 2020. She also received a master's degree from Ball State in December of 2019 in applied behavior analysis. She received all of her supervision at Hope Bridge in Indiana between January of 19 and January of 2020 for a total of 1,500 hours. Those were all signed off by Alyssa Petrosky, I hope that I said that correctly. And there is no licensure required in Indiana. I didn't note any issues with the application and would recommend it move forward and would open it up to my members if they had additional comments.
Mr. Chair, Dr. Hates, I recognize her name, and she may have been a student in one of my classes, but I am not confident in that. Therefore, I feel comfortable being objective in the review of this application, but I'm pretty sure she may have been in one of my classes.
Thank you, Dr. Davis-Wilson. I think that's going to become a greater and greater number and a greater and greater communication from you too. Okay, next item is, or next applicant is Deborah Dahlman, who is my with my review. She received her BCBA certificate in June of 2020. She graduated in December of 2017 from Kaplan University with a Master of Science in Psychology with an emphasis in ABA. She has been a licensed behavior analyst in Louisiana from August of 20, which expired in December of 20. She received 1,526 hours of supervision under a few different BCBAs who are also licensed behavior analysts in the state of Louisiana. I did not note any concerns, and I open up for any other committee members if they notice any concerns in the application.
Mr. Chair, I think the only one that I noted is that her matriculation date is listed, might be incorrect. It's listed after the end graduation date. It's probably just a typo, I'm sure, because the transcripts and everything look fine. Let me see. Or a misunderstanding of what the matriculation date is.
Yeah. I think as a committee, we've had the discussion about the application and the word matriculation, haven't we? That might be removed or modified, right?
Yeah. So I think on this one, if she can just fix it, that would resolve it. It'd be quick, easy.
Okay. Mr. Chair, committee members, this is Kathy. That has been changed on the most recent application that you approved.
Thanks, Ms. Paul. Okay, any other comments on that applicant? Okay, hearing none. Next application is Emily Irvin. Ms. Denton, could you summarize that for us?
I will. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Emily Irvin is coming forth for licensure in the state of Arizona. Ms. Irvin passed her board certified behavior analyst exam on November 19th of 2020. Prior to passing her exam, she attended Purdue University Global and received her master's of science in psychology with a concentration in applied behavior analysis in September of 2019. Ms. Irvin received supervision under several BCBAs in the state of Arizona, all of whom were licensed behavior analysts from February 2019 to June 2020, with a total of 1,562 hours of experience. It is worthy to note that one supervisor, Jennifer Monteleone, was licensed in the state of Arizona 4 months into Ms. Irvin's supervision experience. However, I don't believe this is a barrier, as Ms. Irvin supplied the additional documentation showing all dates of her supervision under Ms. Monteleone occurred after she had received her designation as a licensed behavior analyst. I would open this up to the committee if there are any other concerns. I do not see any. Do I move now? Do I move later?
We'll do a mass move.
Group move.
Yeah, exactly. Thank you, Ms. Denton. Let's see. Next on the list is Jennifer Griggs. Dr. Davey, would you summarize that for us?
Mr. Chair, Dr. Davey, I do need to recuse from this application.
Yeah, thank you.
Your memory is serving you on this one.
Barely.
Ms. Griggs comes forward seeking licensure in the state of Arizona. She has completed the application in its entirety, noting that she became a board-certified behavior analyst 12/23 of 2020. She graduated from Arizona State University, the Master's in Special Education, with a focus on applied behavior analysis program. She has listed autism spectrum therapies as her supervised experience towards certification and licensure. She provided the committee and the board staff with her final experience verification form, which listed five potential or five supervisors. And looking through those supervisors, all currently have active licenses in the state of Arizona. There was some discussion or some review with regard to who was supervising when and how that correlated with their licensure status in the state of Arizona. Ms. Griggs has provided us an additional supervisor list, which clearly delineates who was supervising for what particular period. I cross-referenced that with individuals Arizona licensure, and all things are in order. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Any further discussion or concerns? Okay, hearing none. Next application is Catherine Shepherd's. Dr. Rates, would you summarize that for us?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. So Ms. Shepherd received her BC certification in November of 2019. She also received a master's in applied behavior analysis from Ball State in August of 2019. She received all of her supervision at Adventure ABA between November of 18 and April of 19, a total of 1,541.5 hours. All of this was supervised by Dylan Huff. In reviewing the application, I did not see any concerns and would open it up to my fellow committee members.
Hearing none, we'll move on to Lindsay Noel Campbell, who is a first additional information request was sent to her. In regard to her experience, I did note in there that the documentation didn't match up. So the extended experience was from January. And Ms. Hill, her supervisor, did not meet the supervision requirements until January 18, so 18 days later than the experience form. Ms. Campbell did provide documentation clarifying that the supervision did not start until January 30th of 2018. And in that range went to February 9th of 2018. So while the dates of supervision fall within Ms. Hill's BACB supervision requirement dates or that she met the requirements, the documentation, the board documentation still indicates a date that preceded Ms. Hill's supervision course requirements beginning in January 1st. So that documentation is still listed as that, and I'm assuming that that should be corrected before moving on to the board. Are there any other concerns with that application? Okay. So I recommend it be moved forward just in as long as that supervision experience is corrected on her application.
Mr. Chair, this is Kathy.
Yeah.
Are you referencing the verification form?
Yeah, so let me here. Yeah, so if I look at the application, unless that's been corrected, the application to us listed. Sorry, I'm scrolling down to that area. Yeah, so I'm looking on page 19 of the application in the PDF. That supervised work experience still indicates a range from beginning January 1st of that year. Even though it's been corrected and the documentation is followed, I'm just curious if that documentation needs to be corrected before it goes forward to the board.
I did request that and I did not receive it.
Okay.
And my other, the document she sent, that experience verification form, the BACB one, mm-hmm. is that the monthly form or is that the final? I didn't see final on it, and I was
wondering. That is your monthly or, yeah, that's your monthly form. It was once used.
Okay.
So, So I guess looking at that, we may need to request a second for additional clarification.
You could state in the request, Kathy, that failure to provide the information as requested could lead to the denial of the application.
Okay. I will do that.
Thanks, Ms. Gallagher. Okay, so I withdraw my recommendation to move it to the full board, and we'll need to review it again. Okay, next item, Lola Calandra. Ms. Den, you're the lead on that.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Lola Calandra is seeking licensure in the state of Arizona as a behavior analyst. She passed her exam on November 30th, 2019, after receiving her master's in education in curriculum and instruction from Arizona State University in May of 2017. She received her supervision from February 2016 to March 2018 in Tucson under Matt Catron at Optima Behavioral Consulting. While it appears that Umat Katran's license and certification have elapsed, this supervisor was certified by the Board Behavior Analyst Certification Board and licensed in the state of Arizona during Ms. Calandra's supervision period. Ms. Calandra now resides in South Carolina, but did receive all of her supervision in the state of Arizona from 2016 to 2018, totaling a number of 1,564.5 hours of supervision. Given the review of this, it appears that though the dates are a little bit back and had to do some digging, I don't see any barriers, but I would open it up to fellow committee members.
Any other concerns or any concerns? Okay, hearing none. Next application is Megan Dant. Dr. Davis Wilson, would you summarize that for us?
Ms. Dant passed her exam to be a certified behavior analyst in 2013. She completed coursework she completed her master's degree in behavior analysis in 2012 from Ball State University before I was teaching there, for the record. She did her supervision of a little over 1500 hours in Indiana, crossed three supervisors between the period of January of 2011 to April of 2012. I did note that one of the supervisors did answer no to question number three, indicating that they did not do all of the experience requirements, but because that was just a portion of the hours and the other supervisors indicated that they did supervise her completing those tasks, then I see no concern with that supervisor answering no and providing the additional information. I guess it's fine, but I think this is the first time, or maybe I'm just really tired today, that I've noticed question number one not being filled out. I think people usually default that business address to their home address if a business is not applicable, but it does say business and work and it's left blank. So I think it's probably fine, but I just wanted to bring it up. And also question number six let me pull that back up. Looking at the wrong one. Question number six is not answered, so perhaps we can get an answer on that. I'm guessing it's NA, but would recommend that we get an answer on that. And then we talked about this at the last meeting as well. Question number 19 is not answered, and even though there's a spot for NA, it also, question 18 says skip to question 20, so she really did follow the instructions and skipped to question 20. But if she is filling out question number six, then perhaps she can also complete question number 19
And those are the only things that I saw. I see no other concerns and would recommend it to full approval or to the board for full approval.
Any other concerns with this application? Okay. Hearing none, Mayesha Arguelles, Dr. Davey, would you summarize that for us?
Oh, yes, thank you very much. Applicant comes forward seeking licensure in the state of Arizona, became a board certified behavior analyst 5/31/2012, completed the application in its entirety, notes that National University is where she earned her master's degree in teaching with a specialization in applied behavior analysis. The question, if you remember question 18, is prior to 2015, she did answer yes. She went on and answered 20 or 19, even though it says you can skip it. She did answer 20 with all affirmatives, verifying that she had appropriate experience to be able to move forward with licensure. Her supervised experience towards licensure occurred in California in 2010, 2009 as well, and a little bit in 2011. There's also some that dates back into 2010, also occurring in California. California in 2010 and even today does not have a state licensure, and so state licensure won't be an issue. Individual provided all of her documentation, and I see no reason why this would not move forward.
Any other comments on that application? Okay, next is Natalie Bach. Dr. Ritz, would you summarize that for us?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. So Ms. Bach received her BCBA in February of 2020. She received her master's in education from you in curriculum and instruction in May of 2017. She received all of her supervision through ACES in California across multiple supervisors. All of the documentation was submitted that occurred between May 16 and July of 17 for a total of 1,500 hours. As we just discussed, California does not have licensure. In reviewing all of the documents, I didn't have any questions or concerns.
Does anybody have any questions or concerns? Other committee members? Okay, hearing none, we'll move on to Rochelle Norman. I reviewed that. She received her BCBA in December of 2020. Graduated in May of 2019 from Arizona State University with a Master of Education in Curriculum Instruction with an emphasis in Applied Behavior Analysis. She received 1,508 hours of supervision under Megan Tavik and Ashley Horton for both LBAs in Arizona, and I did not note any concerns. Did any other committee members? Okay. Next application is Ryan Glasgow. Ms. Denton, would you provide us a review?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Glasgow is seeking licensure as a behavior analyst in the state of Arizona after he passed his exam in September of 2020. He graduated from Western Michigan University with a Master's of Arts in the areas of psychology and behavior analysis. In April of 2020, did I write that correctly? April's an odd graduation date. Let me double check. Is it fine? Okay.
As a fellow, I think you're safe. I think our graduation is indeed in April.
Is it? Okay, great. Good, good. It just seemed odd to me. All right, well, I will keep going then. So Mr. Glasgow received supervision from May 2019 until January of 2021. However, this was broken up across two different states. He did receive his supervision in the intensive practicum at Western Michigan University. This was before licensure was required in the state of Michigan. However, during his supervision experience in Michigan, licensure became required. So he supplied us with some additional documentation to show that of his five supervisors, only two of them did not have licensure after January of 2020 when licensure was required in Michigan. And at that point, those two supervisors ended up not providing any supervision to him after the requirement for licensure in Michigan. In order to fulfill the 1,500 hours of supervision required for the state of Arizona licensure, Mr. Glasgow completed an additional 747 hours under an Arizona licensed behavior analyst, culminating his total experience hours for 1,513. I do not note any concerns after this review of all of the laws about this, and would see if anyone else on the committee has any concerns.
Committee members, on this, I'm looking at page 11 of the supervised fieldwork, and we've had this discussion in the past, but from August 10th to July 8th, he received 747.36 hours. Do we need to be concerned about the 130 hours a month max on that? And maybe I'm off here, but with the 650 hours, so if he should have about 650 total hours if we're looking at the 130 a month maximum in that time period.
Certainly thought I looked at this, but I'm going to redo my math.
Or am I misunderstanding the BACBs?
I do believe that's what the BACB says. However, as a new committee member, I'm not sure what to do about this.
Well, 1,500 hours total. I'm trying to figure out if we have to move some of that out. Is there still enough hours?
Well, okay. So if I took, if you use the 650, with the 650, he would have 1,415.64 hours is what I came up with. But I wanted to first confirm that the 130 should be in place. And if so, then he only has 650 during that period of time.
Mr. Chair, committee members, do you need the rule citation for this, or are you aware enough of this requirement that you don't need it?
I think the rule citation, Ms. Pekanon, cites the BACB standard and says that it accepts the most current standard. And I believe Dr. Stenhoff is correct that there is a maximum monthly allotment.
Yes, that's what I'm reading.
Thank you for catching this, Mr. Chair.
He's a stickler for details. So what do we need to do? Do we need to send that back for additional information, or do we need to, I don't think we want to deny it because that, I don't know that we want to cause that issue, right? We either need additional information or we'd give them the opportunity to withdraw it.
Mr. Stenhoff, can you point me in the direction of which exact form, because there's a lot of them you're looking at.
The document on the PDF, so the PDF page 11. And it's the supervision form from, well, it's page 11. I'll scroll down and let you know. Amanda George.
Okay.
Oh, that's right. Stop it.
And Ms. Dutton, correct me if I'm wrong, the additional hours he got because of the licensure challenge in Michigan. Is that correct?
You cut out for a minute. I didn't hear all of that.
Were these additional hours he was getting because of the licensure challenge with Michigan supervisors, or he did those additional hours?
I believe he did those additional hours per the rule that we have 1500 hours for licensure here in the state of Arizona. He had already become certified as a behavior analyst due to his intensive practicum at Western Michigan.
Thank you for clarity on that.
I think move forward as Dr. Davis suggested, just to request additional information. Dr. Davis Wilson, I know you asked a couple of questions. Are you okay with that as well? Or?
Yeah, I think just to give board staff some guidance, I mean, even information on the weekly sheets might be helpful because it's off by just a small amount. And I'm wondering if that January, if they were doing it weekly and not accounting for the month, and if that would kind of recalculate. Because I mean, when you think about it, 130 hours is, I mean, that's a lot of work time. So that would be client-specific work at, 35 hours per week, which we know that isn't usually common. So I'm wondering if we just request the additional supervision documentation to see if maybe they either technically it's supposed to be prorated for the months. So technically August and January would both be prorated. But if they were looking at it weekly, because the old standard was weekly, and so it might've been just habit or structural policy related, if they're looking at it weekly, maybe that would help provide some clarification. Because I don't know how to count January, because it makes the sixth month, but it stopped the first week. We'd have to see how they calculated it.
Yeah. Dr. Stenhoff, committee members, I use a days calculator to pull up the exact amount, and it's 4 months and 29 days, and excluding the end date. So 4 months and 30 days. I don't know if that makes any difference.
I mean, the BACB standard is calendar month.
But to be prorated per the supervisor's discretion, right?
Correct. Which I think is the piece we would need clarification on is, are they counting, like, what was their proration? Or perhaps, and I don't know, but in the letter we can request maybe he has additional supervision beyond that date. I mean, if he's, especially if he's still employed with the same place, they may be still supervising him through licensure like a lot of agencies do. And if that's the case, that would resolve it too, if he has additional hours. So
it did look as though he was still working at Trumpet.
I think, Ms. Folks, if we could just craft a letter requesting additional information for clarity.
Okay. That's, Mr. Chair, so supervision logs and or, is it an or an and? An additional, verification of additional supervised hours.
I mean, you could, I'd say or if the clarification is sufficient to push the applicant over the 1500 hours, then providing additional supervision hours. But if the documentation is clear enough, then we don't need to if it's clear that he's got it, we don't need to do anything beyond that. But if not, then he does need to provide additional documentation.
All right, thank you.
Okay, any other concerns with that? Okay, hearing none. Next, application is Tracy Harris. Dr. Davis Wilson, could you summarize?
Yep, Ms. Harris passed her exam in December of 2020. She completed a master's in special education with an emphasis in applied behavior analysis from Texas Tech in December of 2019. She completed supervision between the periods of 2016 and 2019 across three licensed supervisors in Arizona. I did note, and this isn't necessarily an applicant an applicant issue, but I did note that one of those licensed supervisors failed to respond to board staff's inquiry, and I do have concerns with that. The application itself, I think, is fine, but I'm curious as to perhaps how the ART committee handles this or what could be done, because I find it to be problematic that board staff reached out to the supervisor and the individual failed to respond to board staff, which I believe is a statutory requirement to respond, to provide documentation when requested by the board. I don't know, Ms. Galvin, if you have thoughts on that.
So under your statutes, BB, failing to furnish information in a timely manner to the board or its investigators or representatives if requested or subpoenaed by the board as prescribed by the article. So that is a violation of your statute.
Yeah. So, I mean, I would, and I guess we can address it in the agenda item for next topics, but I would like to discuss that. Perhaps I think the proper way would be to, and I'm not making the motion right now because I don't know if I can, but would be to either have it on a future agenda item. Or I don't know if we can motion to open a complaint or have a conversation about possibly opening a complaint, given the lack of correspondence.
Can we send a letter with the requirement, the state requirement in there, just as sort of a warning, instead of opening up a complaint?
Mr. Chair, committee members?
Yeah.
And just as a supplement to this, in my correspondence with Ms. Harris, she did attempt to reach him at his work. He had changed locations. We looked up his LinkedIn and there was another location. So she attempted to reach him there, got no response. And when she called them, they said that he wasn't there either, not working there. So there's something in flux in his professional life. And so the email I sent was to the one we have on file for his personal email, and that's the one that I did not receive a response to.
Mr. Chair, that's my larger concern, is that, you know, the supervisee made an attempt to, or the trainee made an attempt to track this individual down, and then right. Board staff made an attempt using what's on file, which they have. We also have, you know, policies around or statutes around notifying the board of any changes. So I'm concerned on that note that, and I'm concerned that simply sending a letter wouldn't, even if it was allowable, wouldn't rectify the issue if we don't have the correct information either. Like we wouldn't know if the letter was received. We wouldn't have any correspondence of that. And so, I mean, I think an attempt to bring it forward on an agenda item doesn't mean, I mean, there's a lot of things that can come of it. It doesn't have to be necessarily negative, but I think it needs to come forward on a future agenda.
Okay.
So So Ms. Galvin, is it something that we procedurally, like I said, is it something that we motion on now? Is it something that we just add to a future agenda item as a discussion to potentially open a complaint? I mean, it's not agendized, I guess.
It is not on today's agenda, and I think it would be best to consider it at a future meeting.
Perfect. Thank you.
All right. So, Dr. Davis-Wilson, can we move this application forward to the board? Is that your suggestion?
Yes. Yeah, the application itself is good. And I, again, commend the applicant for, you know, making quite reasonable attempts to track down the documentation.
Okay, great. Okay, next application, Victoria Boone. Dr. Rates, you summarize.
Yes, Mr. Chair. Ms. Boone received her BCBA in May of 2017. She received a master's degree Pepperdine in December of 2016. She also received her certificate in ABA from Penn State. She stated on her application that she is also a licensed behavior analyst in the state of Nevada. She completed supervision for a total of 1,500 hours in California between February of 15 and July of 18. In review of the application, I did not note any concerns.
Committee members, any other concerns? Okay, hearing none, we'll move on to Zara Mason. I know Ms. Mason is on the line. Ms. Mason, would you like to say anything, or do you want to just listen in and, if needed, have a discussion?
No, I'm just here to listen.
Okay. All right. Well, welcome.
Thank you.
Okay. So I reviewed this application. Ms. Mason received her BCBA certificate in August of 2020. She graduated in June of 2020 from Capella University with a Master of Science in Psychology with an emphasis in Applied Behavior Analysis. She received 1,613 and change hours of supervision under Dylan Huff, who is an LBA in Arizona. I did not note any areas of concern. Did any other committee members have any concerns? Okay, then I move that or suggest that this should move forward to the board for full approval. We want to make a motion for agenda item 8A with all the applicants moving forward. Okay. Would somebody like to make a motion for that? Okay, so hearing none, I guess.
I'd be happy to make a motion if I knew the right words. Can I have a prompt?
Sure. Ms. Den, you could say something like, I make a motion that Ms. Folks, do you want to read the list to us, or how do you want to move forward with that one?
I can do that.
Okay. And then Ms. Den, would you, and then based on that list, you can make a motion.
Okay. Okay. Great.
Okay, so the applications to move forward to the board for approval, Chiara Caldry, Deborah Dahlman, Emily Urban, Jennifer Griggs, Catherine Shepherd, Lola Calandra, Megan Dant with some corrections. And I should go back and say with Deborah Dahlman, there's the matriculation date correction. So those two are contingent on the corrections. And then Maisha Arguelles, Natalie Bach, Rochelle Norman, Tracy Harris, Victoria Boone, and Zara Mason. And then formal additional information requests for Ryan Glasgow. And I think there was one more. Yes, Lindsay Campbell, a second additional information request for Lindsay Campbell.
Hey, Mr. Chair, I move that those individuals recommended and listed above move forward to the board for full review.
Thank you.
Or additional information.
Or additional information.
Thank you. All right. So is there a second?
I'll second.
All right. All in favor? Excuse me. Discussion.
Oh.
All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Okay, the motion carries. All right, next item.
Mr. Chair, just for the record on that motion, I am recused from one of those applicants.
Thank you. Okay, next is Behavior Analyst Application for Licensure by Universal Recognition. Haley Widovit, Dr. Race, you reviewed that.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. I did review the application. The individual is licensed in the state of Tennessee since October of 2019. In reviewing all of the questions, everything looked in order. We also were able to review the driver's license showing residency. I didn't have any concerns with this.
Okay. Any concerns from committee members? Okay, hearing none. Tammy Menzel, I reviewed. Tammy or Ms. Menzel has been licensed in Michigan since May of 2019, which satisfies the substance policy statement requiring an applicant to be licensed in another state for at least 12 months. She also provided evidence of residency with her driver's license, and I did not note any concerns. Did any committee members note anything of concern? Okay. Would somebody make a motion for those two applicants to move forward?
So moved.
Okay. Great. Second. All in favor or discussion? Okay. All in favor say aye.
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 Okay. Aye. Any opposed? Okay, motion carries. All right. Agenda item number 9, discussion, consideration, possible action regarding recent updates from the Behavior Analyst Certification Board. Ms. Packenholm, do you have some comments for that?
Yes, Mr. Chair, just a couple of updates, one of which is just, I think, some ancillary information relative to the Code of Ethics, which is, of course, changing effective January 1 of 2022. And then the other material was actually supplied by our committee chair to me just for purposes of here's some information of interest. And typically this wouldn't be issues relative to, supply and demand wouldn't necessarily be a strictly a regulatory issue, but certainly regulators over many, many years have had debates about, whether this is information that is of value to them. And I think where the current thinking is that it does have value and it's something that regulators need to be aware of because it does have some impact or can have some impact on the sort of issues that regulators deal with. So for instance, are we seeing violations that are sort of, precipitate from the pressure of the supply and demand being sort of out of sync and those kinds of things. So just having this awareness, I think is useful. And I do wonder if this is maybe some material that has a place on one of your special meeting agendas where you bring in the stakeholders. Stakeholder groups are reaching out to board staff with questions about what they perceive to be application processing delays and an inordinate amount of time in their minds to move applications forward. So I'm suggesting that this is something the committee may want to think about and inviting, stakeholders to have some dialogue with all of you. I think it's important for stakeholders to understand what your responsibilities are, what your roles are, and what you are concerned about as you carefully review applications and in the process ensure, you know, the requirements are being met. But maybe hearing from them will cause us to sort of take a critical look at what we're doing, and maybe in the process we can find some efficiencies that will ensure we can, you know, keep applications moving forward as quickly as they can. So I hope that makes sense. And I'd love to hear your how you like to direct me to move forward with any of this material.
I think one is just having the materials available for the next meeting, or that the community meeting that we're going to have. That would be, you know, to have that available for review.
Mr. Chair, Ms. Pacanon, if I may, I agree that there's some information that we can kind of derive from this type of a report. And one that comes to mind that we might want to talk to stakeholders about is the substantial decrease in BCABA need, as evidenced by the job postings. And my concern is that there continues to be a misunderstanding of whether BCABA is allowed to practice in Arizona or not. And so I think, you know, that might be an area of target, because there's a lot of value that BCABAs can bring. And, you know, I sit on other committees, and specifically the ones related to access, and we're back to hearing about wait lists that are, you know, substantial. Well, don't let access hear that I called it a wait list, because they don't call them wait lists, but the capacity issues that are present right now could be resolved by having this mid-tier, you know, professional. And I fear, and it's just a hypothesis, but I fear that there's this misunderstanding around the role of the BCABA, which may, I mean, maybe in future conversations, maybe we can, you know, come up with a creative, whether it's a substantive policy statement or something to kind of help move that along, because I think people are discouraged at the BCABA level to be in Arizona. I've heard, you know, professionals say that, you know, they aren't quite ready to get a master's degree yet, but they think becoming a BCABA is a waste because they couldn't practice with it. And so I think that this information is telling when we start to see like a decrease in demand of BCABA, even though we know that the utility of them could serve purpose to the public. I just can't help but kind of wonder if there's just some confusion on what their role in practice here in Arizona could be. And perhaps that would guide some of the conversations. I know the psychology board is having this conversation for the psychologist side, but kind of that we don't really know what to call it. I know, you know, Dr. Davies referred to it as either a gray area or a grandfather area, but there's this funky time period between supervision toward certification and when somebody becomes licensed. And I think because that's not defined, it makes the BCABA, I should say it's not defined as to what the prescriptive level of supervision should be. I think that causes confusion with the BCABAs as well of, do they follow the BCBA standards for BCABA supervision, or should they be following the psychology board standards, but the BA rules don't really have standards around that. So they would only essentially just be mirroring the hours that count towards certification. But then I think they miss the part of supervision's intended to protect the consumer, not just meet a prescribed number. So I think there's just a lot of room for discussion around the role of the BCABA.
We propose an item to specifically discuss this then for the upcoming meeting. Okay. Any other discussion on that agenda item? All right. Agenda item number 10, discussion, consideration, and possible action regarding matters for which a recommendation cannot be adopted due to a lack of quorum. Ms. Packerman, do you want to?
Yes, Mr. Chair. So I will sort of tee up this discussion, but we're going to rely, of course, on Ms. Galvin's expert advice. So board staff, I think we've sort of struggled to sort of, you know, to categorize, if you will, instances where a matter comes before this committee, and for a variety of reasons, the committee can't take action on it due to a lack of quorum. So there may be instances where it's just on that particular date and time, given, you know, who's present, who's recused, and so forth. It may be that an application or some other matter, that a vote can't occur. And so clarity in terms of whether that matter comes on the next agenda to the CBA or is forwarded to the board for the board to act on, we would like to, you know, understand that better. Of course, there will be instances potentially where by virtue of many recusals, multiple recusals, we simply will never have a quorum. And so how do we handle those particular instances? Where applications are concerned, and this is something that's just occurred to me in the last, I think, 24 hours, I think that we need to be mindful of the fact that we have timeframes that compel this the board and the committee to act on an application within a certain timeframe. So to the extent possible, I think that, you know, we need to be clear when we need to move something forward to the board, because if we don't, we'll violate an application timeframe in the process. So I'll hand this off to Ms. Galvin so she can walk us through the different scenarios and what to expect from them.
I think the easiest situation to start out with would be when you have an application pending, and for whatever reason you don't have a quorum because of absences or recusals. And the easiest situation in that set of facts would be to refer the matter to the full board, where, you know, Dr. Davey and Dr. Wilson can handle the matter at the board, and then the board can make a decision on the application. The probably less frequent situation involves the consideration of a complaint. And during a particular meeting where that complaint is first considered by the board, you don't have a quorum. And I think this happened not too recently, that maybe because of absences or recusals, you have to decide whether we're going to table that matter and come back to it next month or refer it to the full board. And I think in those instances where in 1 month you don't have a quorum, not because of, you know, several recusals, but because of an absence or two and maybe a recusal, where next month, assuming everybody is well and recusals, you know, only factor in with, you know, one member or so, it would be best to table it and then consider it at that next meeting where you would have a quorum, because this committee is charged with investigating and reviewing all complaints and making those recommendations to the full board. And you're, I think, best suited to evaluate those complaints and consider all the issues and then make that recommendation. You're probably also, you know, best suited to review an application, but like Heidi said, we do have timelines. But at the board level, you would have at least, you know, the two board committee members who are also on the board who could also thoroughly vet and make a recommendation with respect to the application. The psychology board has a two-member application review committee, which drives me nuts, but they often have to refer the application to the full board because one of them will be recused. So that happens frequently. I think that that's an easy resolution. The complaint, I think the best, and there could be circumstances where this would differ, but the best guidance would be is to table it until you get that full quorum, hopefully the next month when everyone is present and well and not on vacation or something. And that can just be general guidance, and the committee chair and Heidi can work through specific scenarios if they come up at the last minute.
Committee members, any discussion on that? It's not the current policy, right? Or we don't really have policy guiding any of this.
You don't have policy.
Yeah, or rules or procedure.
I mean, you have rules, but it would be, I think, just an internal policy as far as guidance to staff, how to handle the situations with their a lack of a quorum.
And Mr. Chair, I think this happens, fortunately, it happens infrequently enough that it's not a problem. But what that means is that I certainly don't remember, you know, something that this committee, you know, addressed 13 months ago that seems that it may be, you know, very similar facts and circumstances. So by memorializing this in the minutes, then we know that we have a place to refer to if we encounter this, you know, at any point in the future, and we're trying to recall, you know, what we determined or what the precedent needs to be.
If there's a consensus.
I'm sorry, Ms. Galvin.
No, good. I was just going to say, if there's a consensus among all of you that that's how we'll proceed in the future and staff is clear, then we can put it to bed.
Yeah.
Mr. Chair, if I may, we also currently have a statute that I think would kind of support it in the Behavior Analyst Committee language, the need to keep the complaints at the committee level to see it through. And I think that that's, and so I think that if there were ever a timeline issue, I think we could also reference like, well, we've also got this that we need to do. And I agree. I think that even our colleagues on the full board really look to us for guidance on those things. And so I think that I like the idea of unless there's, you know, extenuating circumstances of some sort, like, that we keep the complaints, you know, those can be kind of postponed minus the ones that like require summary suspension or what have you. But again, those are few and far between. I think those could wait. My concern with the applications is that oftentimes, especially like with right now, the COVID and stuff, is that sometimes these applications are pending 3, 4, 5 months already, and then we don't have a quorum. And I just think it's frustrating to the applicant. I think let's say that it's an application that I reviewed, and it's a flawless application, beautifully done, no errors. And it's like, oh, but you got to wait a whole nother month. Like, so I like the idea of kind of giving the blessing for those to go move on to the full board for review so that we can, we have representation, you know, it's not like only the psychologists and public members are reviewing this. There's behavior analysts reviewing it. And in the off chance that Dr. Davey and I both had to recuse, which, I mean, it's possible. But in that off chance, I think we could address that a little bit. We could address that if it comes up. I don't know what options we would have. Maybe have a committee member join the meeting or something. I don't know.
Or I think the committee members who aren't recused could do a written report to the board.
Yeah. So, and yeah, I think that would be sufficient. I like the idea of kind of keeping it that way.
It should be, yeah. There'll be exceptions, but we'll work, take those one at a time.
Okay. All right, any other discussion on that? Okay, discussion item 11, or agenda item 11, discussion, consideration, possible action regarding proposal for RAMP, Confidential Rehabilitation Monitoring Program.
Yes, Mr. Chair. And this proposal may have to most of the committee may appear to have just sort of materialized out of nowhere. So I'll provide a little bit of context for you. So the board statutes were modified, I think, back in 2016 to add ARS 32-2086, which gives the board the authority to establish a treatment and rehabilitation program, a confidential program for psychologists. And that statute was never enacted in the form of, you know, developing the actual program. But Ms. Michelson and I worked on a proposal for the board very recently and presented it to the board on January 15th. And in doing so, I acknowledged that we unfortunately didn't have the authority to establish this kind of a program for behavior analysts because there was no such statute language in the behavior analyst statutes. However, Ms. Galvin, nothing eludes her, so she identified a general statute 3223, which does give us as a health regulatory board the authority to develop this kind of program for behavior analysts. So I provided in the memorandum the language for both statutes, but really what this proposal is about, and because of the fact that the board reviewed it in January and wanted to make some modifications and see it again, that afforded an opportunity for this committee to take a look at the draft proposal and provide its input up to the board when they see it again on February 12th. So we've outlined the terms of the program and we've provided some sample documents that would essentially constitute the interim voluntary suspension of the license, during which time the licensee would be submitting to the evaluation, and then also a sample of a stipulated confidential rehabilitation agreement that, of course, would be customized to the facts and the circumstances specific to the individual. So it's really pages, let's see, the page that starts with the Q&A portion. I'm sorry, I don't know what page that is. But that's really the outline of the program itself. So I would really like to hear your feedback, and we can take that to the board for their consideration on the 12th.
Are we just all in awe? Like, let's, Dr. Stenhoff, you're muted.
Thank you. Would it be appropriate for the committee members to review this outside of this meeting and provide feedback if they have any to you, or would you like to get feedback right now?
I prefer right now because then it would be in the form of, you know, a recommendation. The CBA reviewed this material and they liked this piece, they didn't care for this piece, or, you know, whatever. Right. And all of that can be presented to the board for them to consider as, you know, in total.
And Dr. Stenhoff, if you individually made comments and then submitted them to Heidi and she presented them as thoughts of the committee, then that violates the open meeting law.
Okay, thank you.
I don't know if people need more time to look at it. I'm sensing maybe that maybe more time is needed. I don't know.
Heidi, what's the time? Are you planning on discussing this next week?
It's on next week's agenda, yes. So, you know, that being said, I can, you know, if this committee just isn't ready for whatever reason to make a recommendation, you know, I can inform the board of that fact. You know, this, again, we've had the statutory authority for quite some time to establish this kind of a program. We, you know, I don't know that another month delay impacts a whole lot. We don't know that we're going to see a whole lot of individuals want to avail themselves of this kind of a program. We see it though as obviously a better strategy than an individual coming before us under the auspices of a complaint and all of those implications.
So again, I mean, having been a part of the other discussions, like I'm comfortable with us moving forward with this process. I mean, I don't think that there's any language in here that could not, that is counterintuitive to the behavior analysts, and the fact that Jean found us a way forward with this, I think, is just is outstanding. So, I mean, unless other committee members need more time to read through it line by line, like I don't see why we would delay.
I skimmed through it before, and I didn't note anything that stood out to me either. So, as an issue. So I'm comfortable going forward. Yeah, Dr. Davis Wilson.
My only thing would just be that we just broaden the language anywhere that it says psychologist to include behavior analysts, just to encourage the same process. But I think this is one of those kind of programs that might just require some revision as, you know, the boots are on the ground. I think that the way that it's written now is great. Other than, like I said, I think the problem is if we just keep psychologists, then behavior analysts may not even realize that they're open to this. So that would be the only kind of friendly amendment that I would add in the language changes. But I think it's a promising program. And I think, you know, in previous conversations, and I know it was kind of an area that Dr. Senhoff had brought up before, is, you know, we really should find ways to address some of these sorts of situations in a confidential fashion. And so I think encouraging people to come forward and knowing that, you know, we'll support paths of rehabilitation and here's how we're able to do that, allows for that avenue. Whereas when it comes in the complaint side, you know, some aspects of it become public knowledge and we have no control over that part of it, right? Not all of it, because if it's personal medical stuff or whatever, we can go into executive session. But I think this is just another path to kind of reinforce a little bit of the previous conversations of what Dr. Senhoff brought up, what was that, October, November, of how do we, you know, protect some of the confidentiality of people in some of their most vulnerable times. So I think it's a good program to see up and running.
And Mr. Chair, if I may, I didn't speak to the sort of the name of the program. The hopefully reflects the intent of the program, which is to, you know, try to help someone from a state of potential or real discompetence, if you will, to a place where, you know, they can practice with skill and safety. So that was very much the intent. As, you know, previously mentioned, we definitely have the ability, because we just have broad authority in these statutes to establish a program. The program can be tweaked and fine-tuned as we go along and as we, you know, learn more about, you know, what works and best practices and so forth. And then finally, I see an opportunity here that once this program is approved by the board, assuming it is approved by the board, then we would reach out to the stakeholders and share this information with them, stakeholder groups, and, you know, encourage them to share this with their membership. And so members of the profession are aware, you know, if they're struggling and they're afraid about, you know, the impact to their license and to the clients that they serve, then, you know, this is a new solution that they may want to avail themselves of.
I agree. I think it's some marketing out to our groups. And then to Diana's point, just making sure that the language reads behavior analysts and psychologists or, you know, professionals licensed under this board. So very good. Do we need a motion or anything on this?
I would recommend one, yes, please.
I'll go ahead and make the motion that we move forward with adopting this program.
Do a second?
A second.
Any discussion?
Just the friendly amendment to change the language.
Yeah.
Or add the language, I should say.
Okay. All right. All in favor, say aye.
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 Opposed? Okay. Motion carries.
Mr. Chair, can we briefly circle back to item 10? There was a piece of information that staff wanted to share relative to recusing.
Yeah, absolutely.
Just a quick announcement. We are modifying or proposing that we modify the process through which recusals are registered to board staff and then ultimately sent to the committee chair. We are implementing or would like to implement sort of a click and submit form, if you will. So we think that's going to be a little bit more efficient for the committee members, but it's going to help particularly Ms. Folks so that we have a single repository into which we can verify the status of recusals. I can refer back when preparing the minutes and so forth. So we hope you like it. And we hope that it's not, we hope it's less cumbersome for you, and it certainly will be for us.
And then Ms. Packenham, when does that come online, or is it already?
Tomorrow.
Oh, okay. Wow. Okay. Yeah.
This is Kathy. Right. If I could add to what Heidi said, the form has been developed. I put an upload onto the material site and the G Drive so you can see what it looks like. And we'll be including the link to this form with every notice regarding the meeting so that it's easy for you to find and click on. And this will save you from having to print anything, scan anything, email anything. And for us, it lands all in a spreadsheet. So it's much easier for us to track and log. So.
Yeah. I'm looking at the form here. Is it the one that's on the Google form?
Yes.
Okay, great.
Mr. Chair, if I may, well, clearly Corey thinks she should chime in too, but if I may, I think the form's a great idea, and I think streamlining it, because it is, I think it'll make it much easier to just fill out real quick and not have to download, upload, sign, reopen my Adobe because I didn't close it last time right, need to restart it, and so I'm excited.
Right. Yeah, this will be nice. Okay, agenda. Oh, any more discussion on the form? Agenda item 12, discussion, consideration, possible action regarding licensure and regulatory issues relative to COVID-19. Ms. Packenham.
Just really briefly, nothing to report except just to note that there have been some bills introduced in the legislative session that, if passed, would restrict how emergencies are declared, the duration of emergencies, and so forth. So I don't know if these bills stand a chance of passing, but they clearly reflect that the legislature would like to have sort of place some restrictions on a governor's ability to order emergencies. And so, you know, that's something to sort of pay attention to, because if the emergency is concluded, then, you know, we know that that impacts the licensure waivers, the temporary licenses, and so forth. So again, I don't know that these have any chance of passing. It would also introduce some interesting fallout, if you will, because there would be federal dollars, you know, that would cease to be allocated to our state. Local jurisdictions may decide to take emergency action. So we'd have sort of this patchwork of local jurisdictions, having declared emergencies and the one next to it doesn't. So it's just something, you know, just to be aware of. But other than that, I don't have any other updates.
All right, thank you. Okay, agenda item number 13.
I'm sorry, I have a question and it's the same question I ask every time, but I've yet to see it, and I don't know if I'm missing it, but did we ever get an extension of the current emergency order beyond January 31st?
Yeah, Mr. Chair, I did ask the governor's policy advisor for boards and commissions. I said, you know, we're hearing different dates, and, you know, we don't have any clarity. And her response was that the current state of emergency is in effect and there's been no end date determined. So I guess that's where that stands.
I wonder if, because my concern, so this is something that is happening with, I think it's Illinois' telehealth. Is that because there isn't anything in writing that says, hey, we're still in the state of emergency for an undetermined amount of time or for, you know, another 6 months or what have you, in Illinois, some of the health plans are doing away with their COVID restriction coverage, like their exemptions for COVID restrictions. And so it's quite frightening that, you know, we're still in the midst of a pandemic. We're still in the you know, midst of high case numbers, high hospitalizations, and we have nothing in writing to continue to say we can continue to operate with the assumption of the executive order. And I mean, I guess some could argue that the order hasn't been removed. So I guess that's in and of itself. But I mean, omission isn't the easiest way to, like, you know, drive policy and compliance. Like, it'd be helpful to have something in writing that says, hey, we're extending this for an unforeseen amount of time or until X, Y, and Z occurs or whatever. But it scares me to see what's happening in some of the other states as far as the ability of stakeholders in the public and private sector to say, well, there's not an extension and therefore we can lift these restrictions or these exceptions, I should say, because a lot of it is around like covering telehealth or what have you. And I don't know, just frightening.
Yes, and Mr. Chair, on that subject, I hope I'm not making too much of a segue away from the agenda item, but there's a bill that I'm monitoring very closely. House Bill 2454 makes a lot of proposed statutory changes relative to essentially bringing telehealth on par with in-person delivery of healthcare services. It expands telehealth to those professions who aren't afforded that in statute currently. The governor's executive order did extend telehealth privileges to PTs, OTs, and other professions who were trying to get telehealth privileges in statute, but because that bill didn't pass, because of the closure of the last session so early, the governor's executive order then allowed those professions, extended that privilege practice to those professions. So now we see House Bill 2454, and it essentially is instituting telehealth as as a solution, unless it is contraindicated or whatever by the professional. It does mandate payer reimbursement as if the services were delivered in person. There is one piece of this bill, though, that allows out-of-state licensed individuals to practice via telehealth into Arizona without having to participate in a registry, a compact, and licensure. So that's something that I anticipate the board is going to discuss. There's an agenda item specific to that on their February 12th agenda. But anyway, the focus needs to be on, I think, for purposes of this discussion, that the telehealth expansion.
All right. Any other comments on that item?
Can I just make a request for us to have updates on that bill? Because behavior analysts are also included in the fact that we currently have telehealth, expanded telehealth capabilities that are linked to the executive order. Mm-hmm. And we have quite a bit. And we've asked Access what their transition plan's going to be. What is it going to look like when the executive order is no longer in place? And there's really no guidance or anything in of that nature. But we as behavior analysts are equally affected as those other professionals will be as well.
Yes, Mr. Chair, Dr. Davis Wilson, absolutely. I think that this committee would benefit from having, you know, the same opportunity to discuss proposed legislation as the board. So I'll ensure that that's on the agenda moving forward. And, you know, we are receiving inquiries from a number of professionals asking about what's going to happen, you know, relative to telehealth. And the only answer I can give them is, you know, watch at least this bill and possibly any others. It's way too soon for anyone to supply that kind of an answer, because I'm entirely confident the telehealth statutes will change in some capacity. We just don't know how.
And I would assume, short of legislation closing again this year, that timing should work out because the pandemic's not going away anytime soon either. So the timing theoretically should pan out, provided there's extensions to the executive order for the state of emergency.
Okay. All right. Let's see. Agenda item number 13, new agenda items for future meetings. We had a few listed earlier.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, my two would be the updates on that bill and any others pertinent to the practice of psychology or behavior analysis. And I think because there's a lot of things that can still be affected if bills are going for psychology as well, even though it may not directly affect behavior analysts, it could still affect operations or roles of the committees or what have you. And then I would like to propose a discussion related to the lack of correspondence from the supervisor, Mr. Siegel. And I don't know how everybody else feels about it. I've brought it up as a concern, but it'd be maybe further discussion either globally or specific to the two supervisors that were practicing without a license that, again, ultimately have now resulted in an individual, you know, having disciplinary action, but they weren't, that individual wasn't alone in those actions. And so I would propose that we open up conversation related to both of those supervisors as well.
Yep. Okay. I'd like to hear, this might be very brief, but the outcome of the RAMP discussion as it moves forward. Okay, any other potential agenda items? Okay, agenda item 14, adjournment. Do I have a motion?
So moved.
Second?
Second.
All right, all in favor, say aye.
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 Opposed? All right. We are adjourned. Thank you, everybody.